card sometime.
I'm Mark Riley. In the next hour on Air America Radio, Mark Barron will be listening on the president's schedule today. And as president will never be the same, as we'll hear in the tough questions for him, what's first the headlines at this hour?
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. President George W. Bush faced the White House press corps and the American people last night to talk about the recent developments in Iraq. He reaffirmed the administration's intention to transfer power to the Iraqi people. He conceded that recent weeks were tough on his administration and Americans with the significant loss of American lives. Bush said he was willing to send additional troops if needed. Last night, he responded to criticism that the U.S. occupation of Iraq was his vehicle.
Had I had any inkling whatsoever that the people were going to fly airplanes into buildings, we would have moved heaven and earth to save the country.
President Bush, American troops continue to maintain a stranglehold on the holiest Shiite city in Najaf. 2,500 of them are on the outskirts of the city, prepared to stage an assault at any moment. Their presence is a show of force against a militia loyal to radical Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr. The U.S. government wants him either dead or alive. Speaking of death, the death toll on the number of Americans killed in the past 2 weeks in Iraq now stands at 87. Four more Marines were discovered dead in western Iraq in the last 72 hours. April by far has been the deadliest month for American losses in the country since the start of the war. 9/11 Commission investigating the attacks in 2001 heard from U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft yesterday. He categorically denied a statement made earlier by former FBI Director Louis Freeh. Freeh said that Ashcroft personally told him that he was not interested on terrorist activities before the attack. In another development, Attorney General Ashcroft virtually blamed the Clinton administration for what he believes was his failure to take a proactive stance against terrorists, including Osama bin Laden. And in other stories making headlines, a published report indicates that millions of dollars more were...
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York, the flagship station of Air America Radio.
Vicky, if you had to choose between Kohl's grand opening sale and a romantic picnic at the lake, what would you pick?
Could we do both?
Mm-mm, one or the other.
Well, I'd pick the romantic shopping trip to Kohl's.
Kohl's grand opening sale starts this Friday at 8 a.m., and all of our stores are celebrating with sales on the biggest brand names. Save 30 to 40% on Mrs. Sportswear from Nine and Company, Access, and more. Famous Maker bras are only $16.99, and all Calphalon cookware is on sale, too. Kohl's grand opening sale starts Friday at 8 a.m.
Integrity first, service before self, excellence in all we do. In the Air Force Reserve, these are our core values. So whether we're providing natural disaster relief or defending freedom, the men and women of the Air Force Reserve are there. For more information, visit our website at www.afreserve.com or call 800-257-1212. Air Force Reserve, above and beyond.
South Africans are going to the polls today in the nation's third democratic election. From all indications, the ruling African National Congress will continue to maintain control of the government, but still unknown will be the size of their victory. Some three-quarters of the country's 27.4 million eligible voters have registered to participate in the election. U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan says violence in Iraq will prevent his organization from reestablishing a major presence in the country anytime in the foreseeable future. Annan told reporters that violence has made it hard, even for the small team now in the country, to advise Iraqis on forming an interim government and to plan for elections early next year. And now we know someone's benefiting from George Bush's tax policy. The president himself saved 15% on his 2003 return.
Oh, love fun. Goodness. That's so long.
Scarfing French fries. Just one way to really impress kids. Even better, just one of the many ways to spend time with them. And when you spend time with kids, anytime, it helps prevent crime. Call 1-800-WE-PREVENT for a brochure or visit WePrevent.org to find out more. Brought to you by McGruff, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Dear Calvary Hospital, when my wife Maureen's cancer advanced, her pain tremendously increased. a pain that no one person or any hospital could ease. We knew that this was no way to live, and certainly no way to die. Then one day I visited Calvary, unannounced, and was still given a full tour by one of your staff. I immediately realized that this was no ordinary hospital. Once at Calvary, Maureen's suffering eased. She was sitting up, talking, and even eating ice cream. For those few precious days, you gave her back her dignity, and you gave me back my wife. I tell people today not to settle for just any hospital. There is another place. It's called Calvary. Sincerely, Ben Fargioni.
This is Frank Calamari, president of Calvary Hospital. Insurance companies do not have the right to deny you Calvary's expert care. In fact, it's the law. So don't be denied. Call us at 718-518-2000 or visit calvaryhospital.org.
Integrity first. Service before self. Excellence in all we do. In the Air Force Reserve, these are our core values. So whether we're providing natural disaster relief or defending freedom, the men and women of the Air Force Reserve are there. For more information, visit our website at www.afreserve.com or call 800-257-1212. Air Force Reserve, above and beyond.
Remember the good old days when ice cream cones cost a nickel? When you could walk down to the corner drugstore and the pharmacist actually knew your name? Well, we do. It was all the way back in 1927 when pharmacist Milford Harris invented Pink Salve, spelled P-I-N-X-A-V, to heal his children's diaper rash. And Pink Salve also works on all forms of skin irritations, for babies, active adults, and those in their golden years. Well, just like the horse and buggy, the independent pharmacy is slowly disappearing, but not Pink Salve. We aren't owned by a huge pharmaceutical corporate giant. We aren't going public. We're here for one simple reason: to help heal your baby from the misery of diaper rash. Where can you buy this fine product? Well, if Pink Salve is not available in your local drugstore, don't fret. You can buy it online at www.pinksalve.com or just call us toll-free at 888-4-PINKSALVE. Again, that's P-I-N-X-A-V.
Good morning. I'm Mark Riley, along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Maron, here on Air America Radio. It's 7 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Today, a nation wonders whether President Bush heard the same questions they did and continues waiting for answers. Plus, our peek inside the President's day planner for today. All that's coming up, but right now, I'm joined by Mark Maron and Sue Ellicott. Good morning, folks.
Good morning.
Hi, Mark Riley. Hi, Sue.
I'll be glad to take your questions. I'm looking forward to answering them.
Sound familiar? Yeah.
Shecky Green? I don't know.
You're talking about the man-child president's press conference last night?
Yeah, said he was happy. Yeah. Didn't seem too happy when they got a bit tough.
Yeah. I was having my own sort of personal meltdown last night over Jew Watch again.
Uh-oh.
Did they reach you?
No, they didn't reach me. That guy's not going to reach me. It may be anti-Semitic, but the guy's like this paranoid schizophrenic type of dude or something. Maybe he's not. Maybe he just thinks he has a mission to organize a lot of facts, because a lot of this stuff on Jew Watch is not... Jew Watch is, people weren't listening yesterday. Jew Watch is a website that is dedicated to overseeing. I got to find now I don't have the links on. Yeah, because the tagline is, I got an email from a friend that said, it's that he wanted me to sign a petition to get Google to take Jew Watch, off of Google because it's anti-Semitic. And it says, keeping a close watch on Jewish communities and organizations worldwide. But the thing is like, it's just a bunch of links, and it links things to, pro-Jewish stuff, too. It's a weird, what this all started with is that, they have a list of entertainers that includes everybody, including Elvis, Jesus, Paula Abdul, but no Mark Maron.
Exactly. We want you on the list.
Yes.
Well, I think I'm going to get on the list. But, the thing is, I'm a conspiracy freak anyway. So now if I get myself into this website, I start thinking like that. I start getting, I get back into that, and then I watch the press conference, and I'm watching that guy who's our president, sort of like, he stumbles, but, he's very much present, but there are moments where you even me as the person I am politically, I go, come on, dude, just you can do it. Just say something to me. You know what I mean? Like, you find yourself rooting for him because, like, you feel bad a little bit.
You mean those 7-second gaps between question and answer?
Yeah, it's almost like, who puts you up to this? You know what I mean? Are they forcing you out there? I mean, what are you programmed? Is he some sort of Manchurian candidate? Is he drugged? He looked like he was up all night. Do they have to go, okay, here's what you have to say. Watch the moving ball.
That's
you know?
Right.
Do you think so?
Are you right?
Possibly.
I was looking at him when he was doing those pauses and those little smiles, and you were kind of feeling panicky. My brother and his wife were open to six-pack, and they just thought it was like a comedy act. They were laughing when he got... But I was looking for something in his ear. I kept thinking, is Dick Cheney behind the curtain or to the side of that red...
I am Oz, the mighty Oz.
The great and powerful.
Yeah. I know. I think they actually have technology to beam it right into his head, but it clearly wasn't working properly. They had glitches like we have on Gillette. They're like, you're hitting the wrong button. He's not saying anything.
You think he came from... maybe he uses Gillette, too.
In his brain.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, folks, if you're just waking up, President Bush held a news conference last night and, to the astonishment of the nation, took questions from the White House press corps. Virtually the only topics were Iraq and the September 11th attacks. Earlier in the day, the panel investigating 9/11 released even more reports that President Bush had gotten warnings that al-Qaeda was planning a major attack on the United States. President Bush suggested that there was nothing he could have done to stop the attacks because, although he had been warned of hijackings, no one told him that al-Qaeda would do it after hijacking the plane.
Had I had any inkling whatsoever that the people were going to fly airplanes in the buildings, we would have moved heaven and earth to save the country.
That's a grandiose sort of...
Grandiose sort of statement. When he was asked whether he took any action in response to the August 6th warning about al-Qaeda attacks, the president responded but did not reply, referring instead to what he had done before the August 6th warning. This is incredible.
I just to think that on some level he believes he has the power to move heaven and earth is kind of disturbing. I think there is something within him that goes, I can summon that. I can do that. If there's one thing I can do, it's move heaven and earth because I am God's chosen president.
But you know what? He didn't back up at all.
Yeah.
I mean, on anything.
Right.
You know, the June 30th thing, people are dying over in Iraq. It doesn't matter. We're turning over power, no matter what anybody
We're not sure
says.
Who to.
Yeah.
You know,
and as far as, you know, the September 11th attacks, what I did was right,
yeah.
Period.
Right.
End of story.
Yeah.
That seems to be the line he's taking, because I think he figures that his political base will buy into this. Certainly, if they read that I can't even bring myself to call it a newspaper.
Which
that's
one?
Published here in New York.
The Post?
That's the one, yes.
I said
you.
It for
thank
you.
Thank you,
too. I'm sorry.
Yes. And, you know, the only reason why people read it is because it's half the cost of any other paper.
I only read it when I'm all jacked up on Dunkin' Donuts coffee. For some reason, Dunkin' Donuts coffee and The Post match.
Match?
Yeah.
They go together?
Well, yeah, because you're all jammed on that crack coffee. You ever drinking this stuff? I don't know what they're putting in it, but, man, I just like, go, come on, bring me The
yeah,
Post.
Right?
It's got enough information. Quick,
well,
bam.
You see people all over New York reading it, and the front page today is an editorial that savages, among others, Bob Kerry, and one of our guests later on this morning, Richard Benveniste, former Watergate prosecutor and 9/11 panelist.
Mm-hmm. It swags them for politicizing politics.
Yeah.
But just back to Bush a minute. I mean, it was troubling to hear mm-hmm. him say that he was so happy to take the White House press corps questions and to say that they were determined to stay the course. He used lots of sort of sports kind of terminology, you know, we must not waver, we must stay the course. It was all incredibly determined. And
is not wavering a sports thing?
No, it's all of that.
The huddle in the football, okay, you guys, no wavering. Break.
No, but it is. It's all of that, like, pep talk. It's like a big pep rally
to
the whole nation. Like, let's huddle, guys. Let's huddle, country.
Yeah.
And then he said they were insisting on still sticking to the June 30th date for the handing over of sovereignty, which is very troubling to countries all around the world who don't think that the United States have done enough, if anything, to actually find any kind of group. There's no shared power. Nobody has any idea to whom they'll be handing over power.
Yeah.
And he also said that he will do whatever it takes, that if they need more troops, they'll bring in more troops. General Abizaid has said he wants more troops. Bush said, yes, you can have them, whatever you want. Whatever the troops want, he said he'll give it to them.
Now, what does this do to Donald Rumsfeld? Mr. You don't need any more troops.
He's not talking much right now.
He isn't talking much right now because the president just slapped him in the face.
Well, there's been this battle going on the last couple of weeks between, you know, what the sort of military response and the political response to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And with this insurgency from the Shias and the Sunnis, they the military want to do one thing, and they feel that they are being pressurized to do to respond in a political way, and that is causing tension over there with the military leaders in Iraq.
Is that pressurized from the heat?
I think it
just was a funny word. Yeah, I think pressured is, you know, but pressurized, it's sort of like a crock, like a pressure cooker.
Just well, being, it might be that then.
No, I think that's definitely part of it. But it is kind of interesting. They asked him, you know, who's going to take power over there? And there's that weird kind of like, we got a guy over there that my family knows that we've been, you know, kind of talking to.
Chalabi?
Yeah, Chalabi's friend. No, what's the other guy's name? Biryani? Or
no, that is an Indian dish.
No, not Sistani.
Yeah, right?
I'll look it up.
Al Sistani?
No,
the
not
Ayatollah?
I'm not going to turn it over to him. But maybe I should do my research.
No,
I
think I know who you're talking about, but none of these folks are going to have power turned over to them.
Uh-huh.
Certainly not Chalabi, certainly not the guy you're talking about, and forgive me, I can't remember his name. And the other problem, of course, is that the United Nations has essentially said, look, you all did this, you're on your own.
Well, I tell you what, I got a big laugh in our house was when Bush said that if he wanted to go back to the UN.
Right.
I'm thinking, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they're going
to
give you absolutely zipped.
Yeah, come on in, George.
Yeah, come on.
I'm sorry, there's no one available for that. Everyone's out doing other work. Yeah.
Well, you know, there is still the issue of where these extra troops are going to come from. Do they just not let anybody come back?
I've already gotten some emails from the Fringe saying the draft is already in, you know, it's taking place.
It's getting ready.
It's starting
to
happen. Yeah, they're setting it up. Did you get that, too?
No, but you sign up with conspiracy.com.
I don't think they'll have trouble with troops going over there. I think, you know, Bush pitched his language very carefully at the American people, all about supporting the troops, all about what a brilliant job the American troops have done. He said they have performed brilliantly. I thought he might have pinched that word from Tony Blair, actually.
Brilliant. Oh, he pinches a lot
thing,
of words.
Brilliant!
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't it? That's not a very American thing. That was very Blair.
No, but you know what? It's not a Bush thing. It's very three syllables.
See, the issue isn't so much whether or not there is support for sending troops. The question is, where are the troops? The American military over here is saying there really aren't that many troops to send over there.
Like
they've reached
pretty
much their operational limit. And that means the people, you know, the military families that have been waiting for their kids, their loved ones, kids, spouses, whatever, to come home, aren't going to see
The other big issue is the threat to security of civilians, that France and Russia have told their nationals to get out of Iraq, that they can't be protected, that the military, the U.S. coalition, U.S.-led coalition, has failed in its protection of civilians.
Civilian contractors.
And so they have to all get out. I mean, you've had four Americans dead. There are four missing. There are four bodies that were found last night. So badly mutilated, they can't figure out who they are.
Yeah.
But it seems quite likely they are Americans. Once it starts to be about civilian deaths, then I think that Americans, everybody will start to get much more panicky about this being out of control.
I think they're getting there.
I mean, the military can look after themselves. They have every single piece of equipment they need. It's the civilians we have to worry about.
True.
Anyway, still ahead, Mark Maron has our exclusive peek inside the President's Day Planner, right here on Air America.
Air America Radio.
Clean it up.
You know we were kidding about helping you clean your garage, right?
You can make it fun to do, and your friends can help you too. Clean it up.
To be or not to be, that is the question. Well, actually, for New York's Roundabout Theater Company, whether or not they're going to be is no question at all. Over 800,000 people enjoy their productions every year. And in just the last 10 years, Roundabout has won 15 Tonys and 18 Drama Desk Awards. But the only prize they didn't have was a theater all their own. But that's now changed, thanks in part to a bond issue insured by American Capital Access. The funds raised have helped Roundabout buy Studio 54, the same space where they packed audiences with a 5-year run of Cabaret. The building is ideal for Roundabout staging of classic American musicals. And the bonds are pitch perfect for New York investors. They're fully insured by ACA, so they deliver a higher yield without higher risk. And for city residents, they're triple tax exempt. Around this time of year, that makes for savings even your accountant can get theatrical about. To learn more, ask your broker about ACA-insured bonds or visit us at ACA.com.
I went to the doctor. They told me that my heart was enlarged. I couldn't even walk 10 feet without having to sit down. I was scared. I knew I was in trouble at that point, but I really am this sick, and I really do need this heart to continue to live.
At 29 years old, a heart transplant saved Tracy's life.
Today, I just feel like a normal person again. I can play and wrestle with my son, go outside, blow bubbles, anything else a young mom would want to do with their child.
Tracy not only got her life back, she was able to have a beautiful baby boy named Trent, all because someone like you decided to be an organ and tissue donor.
Just look at our family. Trent was not supposed to be in our lives, and now he's here. We're living proof that organ and tissue donation works.
You have the power to donate life. Be an organ and tissue donor. To find out how, go today to www.donatelife.net.
Here's my report card, Mom and Dad.
The report card your child brings home isn't the only one that counts. The school also has to meet certain standards. The No Child Left Behind law says if your child's school isn't meeting academic goals, you can transfer your child to another school or get free tutoring and other extra help. Now you can find out how your child's school is doing. It's your child. It's your right. Call 1-800-USA-LEARN. A message from the U.S. Department of Education.
A message from the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. Beginning Monday, April 19th, both New Jersey down lanes on the Goethals Bridge will be closed overnight for deck rehabilitation. Monday through Friday from 9:30 p.m. to 5 a.m. and Saturday and Sunday from midnight to 8 a.m. All lanes will be open on Sunday nights and holiday weekends. Travelers are advised to use the Bayonne Bridge or Outer Bridge crossing. Bridge work, which will continue through early November, is weather sensitive and may be canceled due to heavy rain. For daily updates, please call 1-800-221-9903.
The Majority Report.
How much more evidence do you need of failure? How much more evidence do you need of duplicity, of stonewalling?
Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar.
I mean, one of the things that makes me laugh the hardest is John Podhoretz's book, Bush Country, how Bush became a great leader and drove liberals crazy. I think at this point it's their pride and ego that will not allow them to stop shilling for this president.
Air America's Majority Report. Weeknights 8 to 11 on Air America Radio.
It is now 21, almost 22 past the hour, and it's time for our exclusive look into President Bush's day planner for Wednesday, April 14th. Here we go. 7 a.m., wake up. Do not waver. 8 a.m., treadmill workout. Note, face right direction. 10:30 a.m., ask Laura if I can finish the Easter candy. 11 a.m., Greek Prime Minister Sharon. Do not pronounce. Do not pronounce Sharon. Damn, I did it. Noon. Lunch with Sharon. Must be kosher. No cheese whiz on steak. 1:20. Press conference with Sharon. Sharon. 3 p.m. Finally unpacked from ranch. Scrape boots. 5 p.m. Practice I'm not confused facial expressions. 7 p.m. Look into this Iraq hostage thing. Could we trade arms for them? 9 p.m. Meet with Ashcroft about porn. Private screening in his office with Rummy, Wolfie, Robe, and snacks. There you go. That
Yum.
Is the daily briefing. Porn and snacks for the president at the end of the day and trying to get Sharon thing right.
Well, he had a hard Tuesday night, so he needs extra snacks, doesn't he?
Yeah, he needs some candy.
You know, Sue was asking whether or not he uses a big day planner or one of those little small things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, Mark thinks he doesn't use one at all. He just has Cheney whispering in his ear.
He's got somebody.
Okay, Tuesday night's press conference, Bush's third ever in office. One question came up twice without an answer either time, and that question was whether President Bush has ever made, or at least admitted to, having made a mistake at all about anything. Let's listen to his first attempt to answer that question.
One of the biggest criticisms of you is that whether it's WMD in Iraq, post-war planning in Iraq, or even the question of whether this administration did enough to ward off 9/11, you never admit a mistake. Is that a fair criticism, and do you believe that there were any errors in judgment that you made related to any of those topics I brought up?
Well, I think, as I mentioned, the country wasn't on war footing, and yet we're at war. And that's just a reality, Dave. I mean, that's...
Take your time.
that
1 minute.
That was the situation that existed prior to 9/11, because the truth of the matter is
most
in the country never felt that we'd be vulnerable to an attack such as the one that Osama bin Laden unleashed on us.
Now answer the question.
We knew he had designs on us. We knew he hated us.
Right.
But there was a...
Take your time. Don't rush.
Nobody in our government, at least, and I don't think the prior government, that could envision flying airplanes in the buildings.
Wait, what about the question, sir?
On such a massive scale.
Yeah. Okay. You're repeating yourself.
The people
take
know
your
where
time.
I stand. I mean,
okay.
In terms of Iraq, I was very clear about what I believed.
What about mistakes?
And, of course, I want to know why we haven't found a weapon yet. But I still know Saddam Hussein was a threat.
But, sir...
And the world is better off without Saddam Hussein.
Mistakes? Any mistakes?
Only anybody can... Maybe people can argue that.
Yeah,
I know the Iraqi people don't believe that. They're better off with Saddam Hussein. Would be better off with Saddam Hussein in power.
Whoa. What do you...
I also know that there's an historic opportunity here.
Dude.
To change the world.
Mistakes?
And it's very important for...
Oh, my God, I'm lost.
Loved ones of our troops to understand that the mission is an important, vital mission
for the security
of America. And for the ability to change the world for the better.
Mistakes? Any?
Mm.
That would have been good if David Gregory had actually gone on like that instead of just standing there. The issue of presidential fallibility came up again during the news conference with equally, shall we say, poignant results.
In the last campaign, you were asked a question about the biggest mistake you'd made in your life, and you used to like to joke that it was trading Sammy Sosa for 9/11 for what mistakes might have been made after 9/11.
Those were the days.
What would your biggest mistake be, would you say, and what lessons have you learned from it?
Mm. Mm. I wish you'd give me this written question ahead of time so I could plan for it.
Yes, you would.
I love that. He was rattled.
He wasn't joking.
Mistakes, sir. Mistakes.
John.
Yeah.
I'm sure historians will look back and say, gosh, he could have done it better this way or that way.
That's optimistic.
Not just historians. We're not actually waiting that long.
Just,
take your time, sir.
I'm sure something will pop in my head here in the midst of this press conference, all the pressure.
It's not on the teleprompter?
It hadn't yet.
No hurry. America's watching. Take your time.
I would have gone into Afghanistan the way we went into Afghanistan.
Mistakes, sir. Mistakes.
Even though what I know today about the stockpiles of weapons, I still would have called upon the world to deal with Saddam Hussein.
Right.
See, I happen to believe that...
Mistakes.
We'll find out the truth on the weapons. That's why we sent up the independent commission. I look forward to hearing the truth, because exactly where they are.
So do we, sir.
They could still be there. They could be hidden like the 50 tons of mustard gas in a turkey farm. One of the things Charlie Dolford talked about was... that he was surprised at the level of intimidation he found amongst people who should know about weapons and their fear of talking about them, because they don't want to be killed.
Hmm.
You know, there's a terror still in the soul of some of the people in Iraq.
They're still waiting for them to pop
killed,
in.
And therefore they're not going to talk. And but it'll all settle out.
Yeah.
John will find out the truth about the weapons at some point in time. However, the fact that he had the capacity to make them...
It will settle out.
...bothers me.
Yeah.
Well, the terror in the soul is probably only sort of halfway equal to the terror here. When you hear him repeatedly carry on and admit that he didn't find weapons of mass destruction, and then immediately make that segue to say, I still would have called on the world to take out Saddam Hussein. I mean, he did not miss an opportunity in that speech to make the phony link between... the threat of terrorism and the importance of taking out Saddam Hussein. He even said in the speech that Saddam Hussein funded suiciders. That was the word he used.
Suiciders. As opposed to suicide bombers or suicide snipers.
President Bush is not a riff guy. You know what I mean? He's not a shoot from the hip kind of extemporized kind of cat.
Obviously,
50 tons of mustard gas on a turkey farm, bro.
That was he was talking about something that happened apparently in Libya when Gaddafi showed inspectors 50 pounds of mustard gas literally on a turkey farm.
He was trying to make the point that putting pressure on these sort of renegade dictators had worked, and that Gaddafi has denuclearized Libya.
And they got Saddam somewhere.
So their foreign policy is
pressing
working.
Pressing him.
But you're right about his sort of extemporizing mark, is that he's not... He was very rambling and very uncomfortable. He was fine and focused and authoritative when he had his script. And as soon as you get him a bit on the run and you ask him questions and he has to think on his feet, and you try and nail him to actually answer the question, he's all over the place. But it's just maybe, embarrassing.
Maybe he's struggling with his conscience. I mean, maybe he really is trying
to... Oh, you don't believe that.
Maybe he wants to say, I've made mistakes.
That's generous.
I've made mistakes.
I did it my way.
He can't waver because it's this whole tough daddy thing. It's this whole tough love thing. It's like that's how kids get screwed up is when parents refuse to admit mistakes, and he's doing that with the world.
You know you're scaring me. But you're not scaring me as much as he's scaring me. Because he's scaring me.
It's like that's the guy driving?
Yeah. Coming up, more from our Commander-in-Chief. The Attorney General dances and the salon story of the day when we come back here on Air America Radio. But first, news headlines on the half hour.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. It seems that someone in Washington is just not telling the truth. Washington Post reports this morning that by the time a CIA briefer gave President Bush the infamous Bin Laden determined to strike memo, both President Bush and Vice President Cheney had received repeated warnings and reports of al-Qaeda's intention before the 9/11 attacks. The Post story raises questions on just who the American people should believe. It's based on newly declared classified information released yesterday by the nonpartisan commission. President Bush faced the White House press corps and the American people last night defending his overthrow of Saddam Hussein's regime and his search for weapons of mass destruction. The president continues to ask rhetorically, what could he have done about 9/11? Death toll and American losses in Iraq now stands at 87. The bodies of four more Marines were discovered in the last 72 hours. April has been the deadliest month of American losses since the start of the war. This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
Air America Radio.
There's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. If fool me, you can't get fooled again.
Oh, for crying out loud.
I was born completely healthy, but when I was 10 months old, I caught a virus that attacked my heart.
Lacey wouldn't have lived without a heart transplant. Today, she is a normal, healthy teenager.
That heart transplant saved my life. Now, I'm 14, and I'm just starting high school. Some of the things I like to do are volleyball, basketball, drumming, snowboarding, dancing. I can't stand sitting around. My philosophy is to never waste a minute because of this wonderful gift I've gotten.
Lacey is one of hundreds of thousands of people who've been given the chance to live because someone else chose to be an organ and tissue donor.
I don't think about my transplant that often, but if I didn't have it, I wouldn't be here right now. My parents don't treat me any differently. They just treat me like a normal kid, because I am.
You have the power to donate life. Be an organ and tissue donor. To find out how, go today to www.donatelife.net.
Hello, I'm Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Attorney General John Ashcroft was the most anticipated witness before the 9/11 panel on Tuesday. Like others in the Bush administration, he blamed Bill Clinton's people for the lapses that led to the attacks. However, Ashcroft's concern about the threat of terrorism was called into question by none other than former FBI boss Thomas Picard in this exchange with panel member Richard Benveniste.
Mr. Ashcroft told you that he did not want to hear about this anymore. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Of course, that's not exactly how John Ashcroft remembers events.
Acting Director Picard testified this afternoon that he briefed you twice on al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, and when he sought to do so again, you told him you didn't need to hear from him again. Can you comment on that, please?
That guy should just
First
shut
of
up.
All, Acting Director Picard and I had more than two meetings. We had regular meetings. Secondly, I did never speak to him saying that I did not want to hear about terrorism. I care greatly about the safety and security of the American people and was very interested in terrorism and specifically interrogated him about threats to the American people and domestic threats in particular.
So we see the problem quite clearly here.
I thought he was just going to say, like, yeah, but he just kept harping on it, you know? Terrorism. Right already.
Right. Somebody's lying.
Yeah, the problem is that someone is setting up somebody else to look as though that he's perjured himself.
Yeah. And later this morning...
It's like the equation of perjury. Who is it, though?
Yeah. Well, later this morning, we're going to talk to Richard Benveniste, who is on the 9/11 panel.
And you think he'll tell us who he thinks lying?
He's lying? Well, we'll ask him. We can ask him.
He's been a tough questioner.
Pretty clear that somebody has. I mean, somebody has, right?
If you ask two people who've seen a road accident what happened, you know how you never get the same evidence from two different people.
But
two witnesses never really agree. It's like everything, isn't it? Subjectivity of truth. Who's ever right? Your truth and my truth. We may have seen the same thing, experienced the same thing.
It's happening right now.
Went to the same meeting.
Right now we're having the same experience, but you know, it's completely different for you.
I'm sure it is. It always is. It's like people when they divorce, if you ask why, I mean, otherwise people would stay together, wouldn't they?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, two people, they just don't
agree.
Would
they? I'm just checking.
I don't know. But I thought what was interesting is I listened to some of the testimony yesterday afternoon, and John Ashcroft, of all the people who'd gone before him, you know, Louis Free and Thomas Picard, he has the most compelling voice. He has the strongest command of language.
Dude, just focus,
and
too.
Vocabulary, focus. And his voice is sonorous, and it's animated, and he's really compelling. You just think, wow, this guy's really good. You think, oh, hang on a minute, it's Ashcroft.
Yeah,
bad guy, right? Bad guy.
Yeah, he's a good salesman.
He kind of sucks you in, and after listening to people who sound... their voices are a bit weedy and boring. He's really, really compelling.
Good pitch, man.
No, he said at one point that the covert action program to capture Bin Laden for criminal prosecution, he referred to this program as being crippled by a snarled web of requirements. He just uses great vocab.
Well, you know, he's sort of a poet, and I think he wrote some songs. You know, there was a CD going around a while back, some song he wrote about
evil. I remember the song.
Yeah,
you do?
Yeah.
And he's a very religious guy, and it's weird. He really looks like he's carrying some sort of strange, heavy burden on his face. But he's a good...
the burden of the Clinton administration.
It's the... yeah.
No, I mean,
that's what he wants you to believe.
That's what he said. He said, well, you know, this was the previous 9 to 10 years. There was all these walls erected. There were all these things. But he never explained how come he cut... the counterterrorism.
The money, funding. Right? It was all
he
about the money.
He never says where what happened to the money?
Because wasn't it because Republican Congress was pressuring him not to spend the money that way?
Well, he wouldn't say that though, would he?
No, but I mean, isn't that it? I mean, they keep pushing the blame around. All these CIA and FBI people are like, well, we didn't have the number at the CIA,
the
special secret number, and then the FBI is like, we didn't have the red phone number. And everything.
But that's also what we need to pick up on that with Benveniste when he comes later, is that there's that tension between the CIA and the FBI. I mean, yesterday, the FBI is the one that's kind of really carrying the load and being blamed.
They're getting
so
blamed a lot. It's so much so, in fact, that I saw one report, it wasn't from a U.S. paper, but it may have been from the U.K., talking about whether or not the FBI was actually going to be broken up or somehow completely changed.
That is under discussion, and Janet Reno doesn't want that to happen. She thinks that would be a bad idea.
It should just be restructured,
but they're talking about setting up a whole new agency that's structured like the British Secret Service, MI5.
Yeah, like MI5, yeah.
Isn't there also, weren't they saying that there was a completely new system in place as far as, you know, uploading data and getting data to the right places?
Well, heaven knows they need one.
Well, they were saying that they did have one, but it was not used properly, or some people, there was no way to figure out what was prioritized and what wasn't prioritized.
Isn't that amazing, though? I mean, the budget that goes to all these agencies, the fact you'd think they'd be really sophisticated, but you look at technology people have on their own laptops at home, you think if you can doctor your own photographs with Adobe Photoshop, you'd be able to communicate
to
between two
facts.
Intelligence agencies.
Well, it's weird, you know, I always wonder about that. You know, on some level, you don't want to think that the FBI is no different than like the Department of Motor Vehicles.
You do. Have you been for your driver's license recently?
Yeah. you don't want to think it's the same. Yeah, but it's just, you know, some of them, you know, they have technology there too, and it's amazing that, you know, they don't use it.
But you know what? Ashcroft danced so skillfully that he managed to blame part of the problem on one sitting member of the commission. The woman, Jamie...
Gorelick.
Yeah. Now, she was apparently a deputy attorney general under Janet Reno, and he produced a memo that she had written, I guess, back in 1995, and essentially said, well, this is part of the reason why we weren't able to do things.
But Jamie Gorelick, I mean, surely...
Exactly.
He's bound to blame her, though, because she's a Clinton administration official, and their big lie has always been that, you know, we were, Ashcroft said yesterday, you know, we were blinded for nearly a decade. Our government was blinded to its enemies because we were isolated by government-imposed walls and handcuffed by government-imposed restrictions, and it's all about trying to bust the Clinton administration for bringing the problems to the Bush administration.
But the Republicans stopped that money from going through then.
Yeah.
And they're not talking about that at all. It wasn't just Clinton. I mean, he was, you know, he wasn't allowed to act because they wouldn't let him.
They wouldn't
refund.
They wouldn't fund. And see,
because
this is
it's
a recurring
too big government,
theme.
You know.
And no, it's a recurring theme. Remember that they wouldn't fund 9/11 right away. They wouldn't even fund the commission right away. Now George W. Bush is acting like it was his idea in the first place. Oh, we welcome working with the commission. Oh, this is what.
They stifled Clinton at every turn of making, you know, the progress that was needed to make this right. And then they blame him for not being able to make
and
the progress.
And he's uptown laughing at all of them. Maybe.
Yeah, he's just hanging out, working on his book. Maybe he'll call again today.
Now, that would be a real treat.
We've got a former FBI agent coming up to tell us about John Ashcroft and what did you think about President Bush's news conference. We'll take your calls at 866-303-AAR0. That's dial to zero, not Z-E-R-O. 866-303-2270. We'll put you on the line right here on Air America.
Air America Radio. Couldn't you go for an old-fashioned fun drive just about now?
We go to the home of the elderly and disabled people.
We cook for them, look out for their health.
It's hard work.
I love caring for them, but we get so little. So little.
Not even $7 an hour.
These are the voices of New York's home health aides. Every day, the loving care they give to the sick, the elderly, and the disabled allows them to live with dignity in their own homes. But for New York's home health aides, life is a constant struggle. It shouldn't be. The government pays agencies over $17 an hour for home care, but just $7 goes to the workers who provide it. Just $7 an hour, less than $14,000 a year, most with no health care for themselves or their families. It's shameful. Shouldn't their work earn more than a life of poverty? Don't New York's home health aides deserve a living wage? Paid for by $11.99 SEIU.
Welcome to Glasses on Tape.
Okay.
Let's begin. Open your color-coded guidebooks to the yellow section.
Yellow.
Encouraging phrases. Ready?
Oh, wait. I don't have my...
Now, repeat the following phrase. Son, you did great on that test.
Son?
I'm so proud of you.
Oh, son, you did great on that test.
How did you do? Try it again.
Son, you did great on...
Again.
Son, you did great on that... Wait. Son, you did great on that test. I'm so proud of you. Son, you did great on that test. I'm so proud of you.
Hey, Dad. How's it going?
Son, you're so proud. And that's a great test.
It's really not that difficult. In fact, encouraging your kids to stay in school is something every parent can do. Talk to them. Encourage them. Get them to graduate. Don't drop out on your kids. For a free brochure, call 877-4KID. That's 877-F-O-R-A-K-I-D. This message brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
You care about your family and you love them. That's a given. But have you stopped to think about how they'd get by if you were suddenly gone? The Legacy Group of America will show you an affordable way to ensure that your family is taken care of. Find out how to purchase an A-rated guaranteed premium whole life insurance policy. This will enable your family to take care of final expenses, pay off credit card and mortgage debt, or provide a college education should something happen to you. There is no better way to provide for those you love. Call the Legacy Group of America at 1-800-4-LEGACY for a free quote. You'll be amazed to learn how affordable whole life policies from $5,000 to $25,000 are. The Legacy Group of America carries policies for smokers and non-smokers and no physical exam for up to 80 years old. That's right, no physical exam is required. Plus, all premiums and cash values are guaranteed for the life of the policy. Call Legacy Group of America today at 1-800-4-LEGACY. Call 1-800-4-LEGACY. All policies subject to insurance company underwriting.
The real Franken factor.
People would be very surprised to be up here in the Air America studios. For instance, it's completely covered in seal skin.
Air America's Al Franken.
What I thought was interesting was all the researchers for Air America, and I guess this is something that's widely known, are all underage Laotian boys. And that seems...
Juta is my...
I was just surprised, that's all. It just seemed counterintuitive.
Why another smoke?
Al Franken and Catherine Lanfer. Weekdays noon to 3 on Air America Radio.
It is now 44 past the hour. I'll get the hang of it. And we're talking, we're taking your calls at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270. But first, it's time for the Morning Sedition Business Report. Today, in our daily business report, there's good news on the job front. Big companies with dealings in Iraq are on the lookout for potential hostages. Hostaging is a profession that can provide financial security for the rest of your life, whether it's 3 days or even a whole week. And you get free room and board. Halliburton and other military contractors are looking for people who are photogenic and look good in a blindfold. Hey, if you don't take this opportunity, you could be ransoming your future. Hostaging, the new frontier. That's today's Morning Sedition Tasteless Business Report.
That'll guarantee you an international expanding fan club, that one.
Yeah
absolutely. Joining us now is Geraldine Seely of Salon.com's War Room to talk a little more about yesterday's testimony by the nation's top cops before the 9/11 Commission. Welcome to the show, Geraldine. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
Welcome back.
Yeah, welcome back. Thank you very much for being with us. Now, John Ashcroft, the Attorney General, seemed to have cleared up at least one issue. With regard to his own travel, the question of whether or not he flew on commercial airliners or whether he flew on a private jet because of some inkling that he may have had that there was a threat about. Now, how did you look at his response to that question?
Well, one of the things, what he said was that he didn't stop using commercial flights altogether. But there was still this report from July 2001 that CBS News had, actually, that he used that luxurious government jet to go on a weekend trip in which he was fishing. So I don't know,
He started using the private jets right around the same time that they stopped serving food on the commercial airliners?
Right, I know. He's allergic to peanuts, I guess. I don't know. One of the things, some people are saying, and I have to agree, that the commission really let Ashcroft off yesterday. You know, everyone was all ramped up for his testimony, that they were going to be really hard on him, and... You know, all the headlines yesterday morning were basically, led you to believe that maybe Ashcroft is going to be the fall guy for this, and then he gets up there and they really didn't grill him. And that was a perfect example. One of the, the tougher questioners, Democratic Commissioner Richard Benveniste, was a Watergate prosecutor.
He's coming
for
to
this
our show
question.
Today.
Oh, great. Well, you can ask him about this because his question was really this very polite, this is a conspiracy theory. And I'm going to give you the opportunity to explain this.
Well,
and
you
so, you know, Ashcroft said, gave his answer, which was basically, I have flown commercial in that period. And then Benveniste did not follow up with any questions and also said, I'm so glad that I could give you that opportunity. So you have an opportunity to talk to him about that.
But Geraldine, why do you think they pulled their punches with Ashcroft?
Well, one of the things is, I don't know what kind of, personal political things are going on there with the commissioners and Ashcroft, but they've done basically everything that we're seeing in public. They've done in private already, and their report, very well may slam Ashcroft, and I don't know what reasons politically they wouldn't want to just grill him, maybe so that people don't just condemn what they're doing as partisan, as saying, oh, well, of course, Ashcroft is one of the favorites of, Bush critics. He's sort of this lightning rod that sums up, lots of things that are wrong with the Bush administration. So for the Democratic commissioners to just go after him in public, maybe they would undercut, in some people's view, their nonpartisan role. I don't know if that's...
So you think they were afraid to bully Ashcroft, to bully the Attorney General?
It kind of seems looked like it. I mean, they really weren't.
The bully, one of the bullies?
Yeah, doesn't he think he can take it? I mean, of all the people, he seems as though he could probably stomach that.
He's a little scary. He's scary, I think. A little scary.
Well, maybe they just, you know, people are afraid they're going to find out what DVD they rented last or, you know, what book they read.
Yeah, all of a sudden your computer crashes. Like, Vinista can't get, you know, get to his,
you know, can't get to Google.
Yeah, they but Geraldine, don't want to end up detained for a while for no reason,
yeah,
I guess.
In Cuba.
Right.
Geraldine, what thing, or what one question do you wish that they had asked him, that they'd nailed him on?
Well, one of the things was this: the former FBI, the acting former FBI director, Thomas Picard, has told the commission, and this came up yesterday, that he tried to brief Ashcroft on Al-Qaeda, and in fact did so twice, and then Ashcroft said to him, you know, I don't want to hear this anymore. Literally, I don't want to hear this anymore is the quote. And they really didn't press Ashcroft on that at all. Ashcroft denied it, and then they just left it there, you know. And that they didn't continue, you know, to ask, well, how, you know, try to get to the bottom of it. One of you is making this up, you
right.
know.
I mean, do you think that means that one of them has perjured himself, or it's just a, can you explain it away that they just don't remember it accurately?
Yeah, I mean, it seems one of those points that, you know, there are two people in a room, you know, I don't know if there were others in the room, but, you know, one of them doesn't remember the situation correctly. But it seems that a lot of the evidence that even the commission had in its staff report shows that counterterrorism was nowhere near at the top of Ashcroft's agenda, you know, for those first 7 months in office, and in fact cut funding for
porn, guns, and drugs
even the day before. Yeah, I mean, that's just not something he considered part of his job. So it kind of goes, you know, it very much, you know, jives with a lot of what they already have. So, you know, those were the points that it would have been nice if someone stepped up and really, you know, had gone after him on mm-hmm. those things.
Geraldine Seely, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks
a lot, Geraldine. Bye. We're taking your calls here at 866-303-2270. Aaron in Staten Island, what's on your mind? Aaron.
Well, you know, absolutely. It was an interesting testimony yesterday by Attorney General Ashcroft. The point that I wanted to bring up was it seems like with Condi constantly blaming the systemic problems and Attorney General Ashcroft, you know, also talking about all these barriers, that it seems to me they're trying to make the case for Patriot Act 2 and, you know, a greater department of Big Brother.
So he just wants to, you're saying he just wants to expand it. He's actually, you know, pitching that, you know, he needs more ability right. to be watching us on every level.
I think Aaron's right.
I think he's too. Thanks a lot, buddy. Thanks for your call.
Okay, we're going to go to Sarah in Massachusetts.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. Am I?
Yeah, what's
on
your mind?
Okay. What I wanted to say, first of all, was that I really felt that Ashcroft was lying. I mean, I don't know why I thought that.
About anything in particular or everything in general?
About kind of everything. I mean, especially when he was asked if he was flying, you know, commercial versus private. And what I started to think after he answered that, and I don't think he answered that well, was that, in a way, going to get me in trouble, but
by who? Ask.
Yes,
he's listening right now. He's tapping our phones.
As long as you turn off your laptop, you'll be fine.
Yeah, right.
Okay. I feel like the administration, their best scenario is to make it look like they were asleep at the switch, because the alternative to that is that they're awake. They're telling their friends at the Pentagon and Ashcroft not to fly commercial. I mean,
right.
That's really hard.
It's basically, you would rather go with the lesser of two evils.
So you're saying they're just trying to rationalize the fact that, yeah, we might not have been as organized
exactly.
as we could have been, as opposed to saying, you know, we let this happen for our own demonic purposes.
Well, the other thing is,
well,
you've got to be careful.
We needed the war.
We needed to impose a state of fear on the people of the world so we could, you know, gain control of everything.
See, the dead giveaway in Ashcroft's testimony about his flying was the specific dates he gave. That means he had somebody in research go over and find out exactly, because I'm sure he doesn't remember exactly when he flew where. He knew the question was coming. He knew he was going to have some sort of credible answer.
He remembered the nice plane.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Sarah.
Sarah, thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Illinois and speak next to Brian.
What's on your mind, Brian?
Well, you know, I thought it was kind of strange that the president brought up that God gave us our freedoms, like, you know, we're the only people that God really cares about. And I feel like, you know, he might have alienated a lot of the Muslims and a lot of the world from us a little bit more than what they already are.
Right. Just one thing, Brian, though. I mean, Bush does mention God a lot in his speeches. We know that. But he was actually meaning that God, I think he was trying to be a bit gracious, generic God, gave all people their freedoms. He was actually referring to Iraqis and just democracy in general.
Well, you know, I don't know. He just, it seems like, you know, he said that, and he said, and then it's our duty to spread freedom and democracy throughout the world. Like, we're supposed to put our will, which is God's will, on everybody else. That's what I read from it. You know?
Yeah, he's decided that he's God's spokesman here, and apparently some people haven't quite gotten their freedom package from God yet.
Yeah, well, that's my comment. Love you guys. You guys are doing a great job.
Thanks
a lot,
Brian.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it, Brian.
Okay.
Eddie. In Manhattan. You're on, Eddie.
Hey.
How you doing?
Tell us what's on your mind.
Congratulations. You guys must be the one who took me a week to get on. Excuse me.
Okay, well, we're glad you're here. Welcome aboard. What do you got on your mind?
I had a few things on. I was amazed. I mean, this is beyond funny.
it's entered a whole other realm. It's not funny. It's not real.
No, the man did not answer a single question directly.
Wasn't that amazing?
Not a single one. I watched it, and I'm curious, why was there no follow-up? Like, when I think it was the guy from CNN stood up and said, listen, you've never admitted, forget before 9/11.
Yeah.
Just tonight, you've never admitted that you've made a mistake.
That was from NBC, actually. It was David Gregory.
David,
but you're right.
That's a good question, Eddie.
Double dodge, because there was a follow-up question about mistakes, and that was the only point at which Bush seemed actually to be genuinely testy. The rest of all the sort of high emotion, I felt, was good performance. It was good acting. Like, time to do some passion.
But what about the real humility of admitting a mistake? I mean, you know, it's so, like you were saying yesterday, Sue, the arrogance and smugness of this guy is just mind-blowing. Is that the only reason he's not admitting a mistake, which, you know, is clearly the case that there were mistakes being made, is that he thinks it makes him look strong.
But he's actually an interesting mixture, I think, of, you know, extreme kind of hubris and arrogance and rank pulling. And he said yesterday,
and don't
at one
forget
point,
like childishness, because he's really,
well,
he has this weird
split. I mean, you can see in the first part of the press conference, it's all very scripted and he's very authoritative. The next bit with all the fragmented sentences and the kind of stumbling and the kind of all shucks kind of guy. He manages to be highbrow, lowbrow at the same time.
That's his weird charm to those who are charmed.
Weird.
Jeff in Manhattan, what's on your mind, buddy?
Yes, it's about George Bush and his just complete inability to speak.
Yes, he certainly can't riff, can he?
Oh, my God. I can't help but watch it. Thank Jesus, this is the man that people see represent us.
Yeah, that's the man whose job is, you know, somebody else is running Bush, I think.
Well, don't worry. Most people in the rest of the world aren't very surprised because they were shocked at Reagan, and after that we're surprised at nothing.
Thank you very much for the phone call.
Yeah, it is pretty fascinating that it is beyond funny, and it's baffling when
he is what he is.
But you know what? It's quite.
I know that,
role.
But he's supposed to be.
Supposed to be president, but he is what he is.
No, but it's clever because he's basically turned the presidency. He's become the queen. He's become the head of state, and Cheney has become like Tony Blair, the prime minister. They have this sort of double act that together.
Is that why he's been hanging out with Tony?
The nation. Well,
yeah.
What's the queen do? He's like the queen.
Do I just wave? Well, I mean, Reagan was kind of like that
exactly,
too.
Exactly, and that he's in the mold of Reagan.
He definitely models himself
after that. He's the telegenic figurehead that people connect with, and Cheney's the one doing policy and politics and business.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And business.
Amen.
Remember, it's his company
really?
That had people robbing, what was it, $6 million out of Iraq?
This is me and Riley had that weird moment. We're like, mm-hmm. Yes.
Absolutely. Still ahead, is the FBI getting a bad rap before the 9/11 panel? We'll talk to a former FBI special agent and get his take. Plus, the much-anticipated morning devotional from our own Mark Maron. You won't hear this anywhere else, so stay with Air America Radio.
Air America Radio. Please, let us know if we're talking too loud.
The Public Theater in New York presents a play written and directed by Tim Robbins, Embedded.
A savagely witty, very smart, very screwball, and ultimately very chilling comedy.
San Francisco Chronicle.
Embedded.
Wildly entertaining. You'll find more truth about war on this stage than you'll find in most newspapers.
BBC.
Embedded.
Poisonous.
Who's that from?
The New Republic.
Whoa.
Embedded.
Savagely witty and incisive, uncompromising.
LA Times.
Embedded.
Swift, savage, sharply clever lampoon.
New York Star Ledger.
Embedded.
Bad taste.
Who's that from?
Fox News.
Well.
Embedded.
Excellent, timely, and compellingly cutting satire, a tribute to the finest traditions of drama and political comedy.
Democracy Now.
Embedded by Tim Robbins at the Public Theater.
212-239-6200.
Order tickets now.
212-239-6200.
Order tickets now.
212-239-6200.
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York, the home of Air America Radio.
In the next hour of Morning Sedition here on Air America, we'll get the inside scoop on John Ashcroft's testimony from a former FBI guy. And we'll pray that our morning devotional doesn't offend you too much. But first, the headlines.
Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. Yet another bombshell development from the nonpartisan commission investigating the 9/11 attacks. The Washington Post reports this morning that both President Bush and Vice President Cheney were given repeated warnings long before the infamous Bin Laden determined to strike memo on August 6, 2001. The declassified information was released yesterday by the commission. The information shows that someone is lying about what they knew about terrorism and particularly Bin Laden before the deadliest assault on American soil. U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft was on the hot seat yesterday offering his recollection of events and decisions made before the 9/11 attacks. Ashcroft vehemently disagreed with the testimony of ex-FBI Chief Louis Free, who declared Ashcroft did not consider terrorist threats a top priority. The Republican Ashcroft not only denied the statement by Free, who worked for the Clinton White House, but the Attorney General went on to virtually point the finger of blame on the previous administration for not doing enough.
The simple fact of September 11th is this. We did not know an attack was coming because for nearly a decade our government had blinded itself to its enemies.
Ashcroft's comments appear to echo the sentiments of most Republicans on who knew what and did what to prevent terrorism in the U.S. Published report indicates that millions of dollars more were spent investigating former President Bill Clinton and his admitted indiscretion with a White House intern over a seven-year period than the $15 million the 9/11 Commission will use to investigate the worst attack on American soil ever. Kenneth Starr's office of the Independent Counsel investigating the Monica Lewinsky affair spent $65 million in a seven-year period. The 9/11 Commission's work will conclude by July 26 at $15 million. This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
NBC Thursday, the most anticipated event of the year is here, The Apprentice finale. For 13 weeks, America's heard two little words.
You're fired.
You're fired.
I have to say.
You're fired.
But Thursday, the two words we've been dying to hear.
You're hired.
The Apprentice two-hour finale. Only two men remain.
Okay, fellas, let's go.
Can Bill handle the pressure?
I didn't sleep a wink last night. I was tossing, I was turning.
Can Kwame handle Omarosa, who's supposed to be in charge of guest star Jessica Simpson?
I was so confused, I didn't know what to do.
Are you stressed like I'm stressed?
It's finally here.
You think you're better than Foreman?
The Last Boardroom.
You think you're going to do a better job for me than Bill?
The Final Decision. And it's going down live. Who will be the apprentice? What is the dream job? And on Dateline Friday, a behind-the-scenes look at the finale. Plus, a sneak peek at The Apprentice 2. But Thursday, the most anticipated event of the year, the two-hour Apprentice finale after a full hour of Friends on NBC.
South Africans are going to the polls today in the nation's third democratic election. From all indications, the ruling African National Congress will continue to maintain control of the government, but still unknown will be the size of their victory. Some three-quarters of the country's 27.4 million eligible voters have registered to participate in the election. Now we know someone's benefiting from George Bush's tax policy. The president himself saved 15% on his 2003 return thanks to last year's tax cut. Vice President Dick Cheney and his wife saved $88,000 on over $1.2 million in income. The president's savings were about $40,000 on an $800,000 income. Democratic presidential challenger John Kerry also benefited, saving at least $2,500 in stock dividend taxes. And it's also reported that the U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan says violence in Iraq will prevent his organization from reestablishing a major presence in the country anytime in the foreseeable future.
Vicky, if you had to choose between Kohl's grand opening sale and a romantic picnic at the lake, what would you pick?
Can we do both?
Mm-mm, one or the other.
Well, I'd pick the romantic shopping trip to Kohl's.
Kohl's grand opening sale starts this Friday at 8 a.m., and all of our stores are celebrating with sales on the biggest brand names. Save 30 to 40% on Mrs. Sportswear from Nine & Company, Access, and more. Famous Maker bras are only $16.99, and all Calphalon cookware is on sale, too. Kohl's grand opening sale starts Friday at 8 a.m.
If you want to clean out harmful deposits in your fuel injectors and restore lost performance, try just one bottle of Gum Out. It's that simple. Okay, that's it. I have 15 more seconds, huh? Just takes a bottle of Gum Out. There. Cleans your fuel injector. Yep. Gum Out. Good, clean driving. Hang. Pick up a bottle of Gum Out fuel injector cleaner now at Pep Boys.
Bad breath is something none of us want. It may cause self-consciousness or embarrassment. Fortunately, there are remedies for it. If you're not cleaning your teeth properly, food particles stay in the mouth, attracting bacteria which cause bad breath. To lessen the effects of bad breath, practice good oral hygiene. Use dental products with the ADA seal of acceptance. Floss once a day and brush twice a day, paying special attention to the back of your tongue. Try keeping a journal of the foods you eat and make a list of any medication you're using. Some foods and medications may be a cause of bad breath. Avoid mints containing sugar. They only mask the odor temporarily and may cause tooth decay. Be aware that bad breath may be a sign of a more serious health problem. If you have any questions about your breath, ask your dentist. For the ADA Dental Minute, I'm Dr. Maria Lopez-Howell. To find out more about your dental health, visit ADA online at ada.org.
Covad Broadband Service Rep Arne Lewick on music. On fashion. On art.
Love that guy.
And on business broadband.
Oh, the key to business broadband is the same as any business decision. You want the best product at the best price. At Covad, we have broadband that's built for business, unlike the local phone company, which specializes in residential plans, and we have it for less. Hundreds of dollars a year less. And that's for broadband from us, the business broadband experts. Now, don't even get me started on Covad's selection of broadband services. Fixed IP addresses for firewalls, for web and email hosting. Well, the list just goes on and
Arne
on.
Arne Lewick on politics. Business broadband. Covad knows it like nobody else. To get broadband built for business, call 1-800-555-0454. Plus, get a free router after mail-in rebate through June 30th, 2004 when your business signs up at 1-800-555-0454 or gocovad.com. Not available in all areas. Saving based on published rates, March 10th, 2004.
Hey, I'm Mark Maron here with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. It's 7 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Today, a former FBI official tells all about what John Ashcroft told and didn't tell the September 11th commission. Plus, we'll visit the recovery corner for some much-needed healing. And now we revisit JewWatch.com. You know, it all started with this. Well, no, but, you know, I mean, I imagine I'm going to get some flack, you know, about, you know,
about from Jews as well, only in the sense that, you know, I got an email that said, you know, Jew is a derogatory term. Like, if you say, you know, that guy's a Jew, that's bad. But if I tell my friend, hey, Jew, that's okay. But you know how that goes. But the thing is like, they want me to sign a petition, you know, to get this off of Google.
Have you signed it yet?
No, I'm not going to sign it because I'm fascinated with what this guy is all about. You know, it's not so much, you know, that he's just saying kill all Jews. He's actually done this sort of obsessive link collection that has, you know, Torah studies links on it. It's got the Temple Mount links on it. You can go to the Temple Mount link, and if a lot of people don't know, that, you know, the Zionist Christian agenda is to remove the Dome of the Rock, yeah, which is the third holiest shrine of Islam, you know, off the Temple Mount so the Messiah can come, you know, and that's why
Muslims aren't pleased.
Yeah, well, that's why so much of that, you know, Zionist Christian money goes into it. But that's getting off of the point.
But really, you should get on the website before you sign the petition to get off it.
Yeah, well, that might happen.
It's a two-prong approach.
I've become sort of obsessed with, you know, the mind that would, you know, that would organize this like this, because it's not clear other than, like, he's completely obsessed with the truth that he sees is the truth of Jews dominating the world on all levels. Like, there's an area here where you go to Jewish mind control.
Oh,
all right, there's
a
whole bunch of
them. Is that the one with Paula Abdul?
No, that's the celebrity ones. Oh. But there's a bunch of different...
I'd like to see a crossover, celebrity Jewish mind control.
Control, yeah.
Well, it's probably on here, but I went to the Freudianism, which I don't even think is a word, but Freudianism, is that a word? Freudian, I know there's a Freudian school, but is Freudianism as a school of mind control, does that really exist? But he's got a piece in there by this guy who I don't know who it is. And this is really classic conspiracy theory writing. Because if you read conspiracy theories, if you don't know your facts or you're prone towards, you know, poetic trajectories, it kind of feels like thinking and it seems like truth, you know. Like, here's this is the last sentence or two sentences of the Freudianism section. The hidden unconscious mind of America is the Marxist subconscious of the bottom of the modern American and European societies. The mind of these worlds are strictly created and controlled by Jews, and it is done cleanly and with ultimate Yahweh-esque perfection.
Yahweh-esque.
Perfect.
Yo, Yahweh.
But what does that mean? It doesn't really mean anything other than, you know, nothing really.
But it's like all these weird pamphlets and stuff that you pick up. It all sounds very convincing until you get to the end of the sentence and go, what?
But Yahweh-esque perfection.
Yahweh-esque
there's something
perfection.
About, like, cleanly and with ultimate Yahweh-esque perfection.
I think it could become
enjoy
a book.
Enjoy Budweiser.
Yeah.
That could be... It sounds like an
great literature, man. Great literature.
This beer tastes Yahweh-esque. It's that
low
perfect
carb
and clean and low carb and Yahweh-esque.
I become sort of fascinated
with the agenda of the person that put this website together.
Well, let's talk about a different agenda. Let's talk about the agenda of our commander-in-chief. President Bush went before the nation last night to answer questions about Iraq and September 11th, although the previous administration had advised his national security advisor to greatly increase U.S. efforts to roll up al-Qaeda. Roll up al-Qaeda?
Roll them up in the carpet.
Oh, roll back.
It's a wrap.
Oh, it's a wrap. Okay. Now I understand everything. And although his own intelligence agencies warned him that al-Qaeda was planning a major strike on the United States, President Bush explained that he might have gone after al-Qaeda aggressively if he had thought of it.
I guess there have been some that said, well, we should have taken preemptive action in Afghanistan and then turned around and said we shouldn't have taken preemptive action in Iraq. And my answer to that question is that, again, I repeat what I said earlier, prior to 9/11, the country really wasn't on a war footing. And the frankly mood of the world would have been astounded had the United States acted unilaterally in trying to deal with al-Qaeda in that part of the world. It would have been awfully hard to do as well, by the way. We would have had we hadn't got our relationship right with Pakistan yet. The Caucasus area would have been very difficult from which to base. It just seemed an impractical strategy at the time, and frankly, I didn't contemplate it.
That was beautiful, wasn't it? It was so many wafflings and so many confused ideas. Wait all in a couple of paragraphs.
Did he say caucus?
Yeah, I think he was thinking...
He was thinking caucuses.
He was getting muddled up with the election.
We didn't get our relationship right with Pakistan.
Well, right. One might argue...
We hadn't cozied up close enough to that dictator.
Yeah, well, it's still not right. The thing that was amazing in all of this is that the fact that he kept on saying the same old stuff. I mean, he was very good. The only thing he was good at was repeating himself. He was like one of those Chatty Cathy dolls where you pull the string and they say, I am your friend.
Yeah.
Please take me for a walk. All he said over and over was the same old thing. If we could have stopped it, if only I had known. And the thing is, at one point, you probably heard this, he said that I didn't act on the stuff that I was told because to me it seemed as though there was nothing new. Which made it even worse. It made it seem as though they had known this stuff about Bin Laden for even longer than they initially let on, which made me question even more why they didn't act on it.
He said he didn't contemplate it.
Well, I'll tell you what.
He didn't think about it.
You know, there's one newspaper in this country that is not questioning. I'm sure there are others, but we have one here in New York.
The Post.
Yes. And according to the Post, everything George W. Bush said last night was the truth, and you better buy it.
Yeah, well, maybe it was the truth, but it's just the truth that says that, like, you know, I wasn't really paying attention, and even if these things did come across my
desk, you're partisan.
It wasn't necessary.
You're
to,
a shill.
Like, take action. There was I had trouble thinking about it and connecting the thoughts. You know, Ben Beniste. This guy sounds as disjointed as I do when I'm trying to talk about something, and that's not a good thing because he's the president.
Well, you know, that is, I think, a scary part of his.
I have a vague understanding of political ideas. You know, I come from the gut in my reactionary response to things. I'm fragmented a lot of times in discussions about politics. That's because I'm a guy who, I'm a comedian. You know, I'm not the president. So this guy, he's up there like, throwing words around caucuses, and he's not even hitting beats. He's not even funny. There's no lyricism to it. There's no, you know, movement or anything. It's just these fragmented ideas.
I mean, did you notice his little, he gets on sticking his tongue through his lips, and then he gives his little smiles when he paused, and there were a lot of pauses. And he also kept on putting his arms out towards the members of the press corps when they asked questions, and sort of for emphasis. And it was like he was speaking to children. The way he was talking and waving his arms around is as if he were trying to make his case to a bunch of toddlers.
The vice president told him. I'm sure the vice president. Has there been a more powerful vice president in American history than Dick Cheney? Has there been anybody who's had the stones to drive over?
Let me answer that like Bush would. Well, we had a guy a few years back who was with the president at that time, who was powerful as well.
And who was that?
We'll be back with Joe Cantamessa here on Air America, the FBI agent who's going to give us some insight into John Ashcroft's testimony. So stick around.
Air America Radio. Is there a damn thing they can do about it? Well, not just yet, anyway.
We spend almost $500 billion each year. We are a diverse community with a diverse range of needs. We are mothers, fathers, car buyers, and homeowners. We have an above-average discretionary income, and we're willing to spend it. We are brand loyal and favor companies who speak to us. We are an influential voice in everything from politics to fashion. We are sometimes misunderstood, but always willing to listen. We are the estimated 15 million gay and lesbian consumers in the United States. Are we your customers? Qtopia Media is a marketing firm specializing in the gay and lesbian marketplace. If you would like to grow your business by advertising to this important community, please visit www.qtopiamedia.com. That's qtopiamedia.com.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD. Recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't have to be plastic to kill someone. Even one or two drinks can impair your judgment and change your life forever.
So keep it real, keep it real. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Introducing Venture Magazine, the progressive voice for the next generation of market makers. Hi, I'm Kevin Halloran, publisher of Venture, the magazine of risk and reward, where opportunity is seized on every page and where new ideas spring to life. For a free trial issue of Venture, call 866-MY-ISSUE and learn how Samsung steps into the cool as a serious threat to Sony, or how the hidden wealth of Vietnam may fuel the best investment opportunity of the year. In this issue of Venture, you'll discover the emergence of nanotechnology and separate science fact from fiction. Experience intimacy in the City of Angels at the Frank Gehry Design Disney Hall and enjoy the new American splendor. For those who have achieved, those who desire to succeed, and those who dream, Venture is your magazine. Call 866-MY-ISSUE to start your subscription or learn about employment, investment, and partnership opportunities. And remember, in business and in life, always Venture.
Randy Rhodes.
Can you imagine that? In this day and age, that being a Democrat is enough to get you, like, literally on Nightline and on CNN and on MSNBC? That's a story? That right there should tell you everything you need to know about what is going on in this country and why it's wrong.
Randy Rhodes, afternoons 3 to 7 on Air America Radio.
It's coming up on 20 past the hour, and now it's time for today's morning devotional. Each day on Morning's Edition, we join hands and humbly ask the Heavenly Father for his guidance in the coming day. Today, Israeli Prime Minister Sharon visits the White House, so we thought we would ask the Lord to lean on him a little. Dear Lord, we know the Jews are your chosen people, especially the ones who live in the battle-scarred strip of the desert called the Promised Land. So, if you've got any pull with them, we humbly ask you that you get them to chill a little bit, you know, just a tad. I mean, we know they've got it rough over there, but things like blowing up the old Sheikh Yassin guy in the wheelchair, it aggravates people. The kind of people who like to drag charred American bodies through the streets. Okay, we're the idiots who blundered into Iraq and don't know how to get out, but Lord, please tell the Israelis that we don't need a smaller, loudmouth buddy yelling, "My American friend here is going to kick your ass!" at every Muslim extremist this side of the West Bank perimeter fence. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory in a world without end. We ask this through Christ our Lord. Amen. That's been the morning devotional. All right. Now, FBI Special Agent Joe Cantamessa was in charge of the New York Special Operations Branch at the time of the first World Trade Center bombing. He coordinated all technical support to the investigation, as well as the follow-up investigation of the blind sheik and others who were convicted of conspiring to blow up the federal building and several tunnels in New York. He retired from the FBI in June of 98, and we welcome him to the show. Joe, how are you?
Good. Good morning. Thank you.
Yeah, so Joe, what's going on? The FBI's taking some hits.
Well, the FBI is used to taking hits. They did it for the last 10 years, and I'm sure it'll continue into the future.
So what do you think of that, though? How do you feel about taking the hits? What do you think of being the fall guy?
Of course, the information that's presented at the commission and the information that is regularly shared outside the agency is always subject to question. There's a lot of classification issues and a lot of procedural issues, but you know, it's not the worst. It's just unpleasant, as it turns out.
But how can things get so cluttered and disorganized? How can the information not rise to a priority status, or as they are accusing the FBI is not making it a priority?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Information flow within an organization such as the FBI is supposed to be structured, supposed to be managed and organized through a series of management structures, organizational structures, as well as information sharing systems.
Right.
They all obviously were not at optimum operating condition prior to 9/11.
Why is that?
You can share the responsibility for that. I believe we heard yesterday Congress should have a little bit of that from funding. There's probably a fair amount of management issues. And, of course, it always comes down to the individual agents and supervisors that may or may not make the right decision at the time.
Joe, help us a bit, if you would, just react to yesterday's testimony before the 9/11 Commission. How did you think that Louis Free, ex-FBI director, did? How did you think Ashcroft did? And how did you think Thomas Picard did?
Well, I think Louis did his usual professional job in citing the facts to the most accurate level possible. I think he was more involved than any of the others that testified during the period that led up to 9/11, of course. Tom Picard has been a longtime career FBI agent, and he was in the hot seat for a variety of reasons, but at the same time, the FBI was managing, literally hundreds of programs that some included terrorism and, of course, risks of that category, but the rest of the FBI was also being required to function.
But what about the kind of he said dust-up between John Ashcroft and Thomas Picard? I mean, basically, Picard has said that Ashcroft told him to back off, don't bug me anymore with your stuff about terrorism, and Ashcroft saying, I never said that. I said I was interested.
You know, I think we're all going to have that question, but I find it hard to believe that anybody would take such a position. I believe they probably had a procedural communication conflict. I believe that the briefing materials that are often pressed up through the Attorney General's office and hopefully will get to the White House very often get limited, chopped, and, you know, that's just the way business was conducted, and it's probably not like that anymore. But back then, there were many programs, and Ashcroft, of course, had his own list of agendas, and I'm sure that terrorism was on that list, but I know it wasn't all by itself.
So which one do you think is telling the truth, Ashcroft or Picard?
That's a tough one. Picard personally, and I've never known him not to tell the truth. I don't know the Attorney General personally. I happen to like many of the Attorney General's programs and policies.
But do you spite him as an individual?
Well, no. I'm a pro electronic surveillance, physical surveillance, Patriot Act supporter. So, you know, because I grew up in the Cold War follow-up, and I believe that we needed to be more aggressive.
Can you see me now? I'm waving into my computer.
I understand. Listen, you know, one thing. This is a real clear point that needs to be shared. Sometimes, for 22 years in the FBI, I can remember many instances where agents and supervisors and management were particularly concerned over violating the policies, the sharing, the wall between criminal investigative material, foreign counterintelligence. That's no lie. That's absolutely the way we operate.
Isn't that part of the FBI's job? Like, I was thinking this the other day. The CIA and the FBI and the intelligence community, you know, they have to sort of drive their own ship in terms of gathering information because they do a lot of it under the radar. They can't ask permission about everything, and they're bound to take the hit for stuff because, you know, a lot of the stuff that you guys do is pretty, it's covert.
A lot of it is covert, but the separation between criminal and foreign counterintelligence work was a little bit excessive, in my opinion, but we still followed the rules. I operated collection agency systems in both categories, and I do know, as I said, that there were many instances where information just simply could not be shared between the individual investigating groups.
But New York was hit once already. I mean, I don't understand how, like, you know, that was, you know, you were on guard when that happened, and you guys had a lot of success in gathering information. I mean, how could they not have known? You know, certainly that they knew that planes could be hijacked. They knew a lot of stuff. And this was already a target that had been attempted to be hit, you know, and was hit before. I just don't understand how.
Sure. It's been said on more than one occasion that the preponderance of collected information, however and wherever documented, of course needs to be correlated. It's often been said that the FBI didn't know what it knew, and unfortunately, that's turned out to be true for all of the agencies involved. It's not just about sharing information. It's not just about connecting the dots. It's about collecting them. getting the puzzle pieces in the right puzzle before you start to assemble the puzzle.
But see,
there
now,
probably dozens going on at that time.
Okay, now, you say on the one hand, you know, there may be some very good reasons for not sharing information between agencies, but, you know, there was a situation where an FBI agent in Phoenix talked about Al-Qaeda members taking flight lessons. Colleen Rowley's story comes up. These were right. within the FBI. How come there
sure.
wasn't better coordination there?
Let's go back to the first part about sharing information. For the last 15 years at least, the FBI and the CIA and the NSA have always shared personnel, had various management positions shared, and there was no, you know, lack of communication between the organizations. The information, however, at the investigative level, unless it floated up to the proper level for the exchange, may not have been known and may not have been of sufficient priority.
But Joe,
yes,
Cantonese,
I agree. Sure, certainly some of that information should have come up, and while it was somewhere in the organization, it just didn't get to the right people or the right places.
Joe Cantonese, you're a former FBI special agent, and you probably heard Janet Reno yesterday, ex-attorney general under Bill Clinton, say she sees no legal reason why the FBI and the CIA can't share information. So is this just a kind of pride thing?
Well, no, no, definitely not a pride thing. As a matter of fact, when the Attorney General Ashcroft was being read the segment from General Reno's testimony, I could see him, you know, sort of take subtle issue with that. I'm not sure that she accurately, I guess, stated the facts as they are or as they were at that time. Yes, there's no prohibition against sharing information between agencies. There was more of a prohibition within the individual organizations for sharing investigative information while it wasn't vetted, it wasn't properly or completely understood.
Okay.
Hey, do you think that Ashcroft or Picard should be investigated for perjury?
No, I think you can probably argue, and they would certainly be comfortable with the fact that in the context of their communications, their various dialogues, you know, they're probably both telling the exact truth in the context that they're making reference to.
See, if only you'd had a camera in the room.
Well, yeah, but, you know, that's another story, of course. But the numbers of briefings, the interactions between the FBI, the Justice Department, and, of course, the White House, you know, that's really the Attorney General and the Justice Department's
All right.
responsibility.
Well, thanks a lot, Joe. Appreciate your time.
All right. Good luck. Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Still ahead, did you get as big a tax break as President Bush and Dick Cheney did? Ha ha. Plus, Mark has today's Recovery Corner. But first, a quick check on the headlines.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. President Bush would occasionally ask his CIA briefers whether any of the threats by terrorists pointed to the United States. A partial answer was given in the infamous August 6th memo, indicating that Osama bin Laden always wanted to strike here. That's just one of the findings released yesterday by the 9/11 Commission in a declassified statement on what the Bush White House knew. Washington Post reports this morning that the document is indication that the president and vice president, as well as the national security advisor, had several reports on the activities of Al-Qaeda. President Bush defended his decision to invade Iraq and oust Saddam Hussein at a one-hour news conference last night. Bush also said he's willing to send more Americans to Iraq until, as he puts it, the job is done. Federal hearing is on the schedule for today on whether the government should begin allowing the import of cheaper AIDS drugs. Consumer advocates and AIDS groups say the recent decision by a pharmaceutical to spike five times the price of the anti-AIDS drugs Novair has prompted the issue of cheaper drugs. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Air America Radio. There's more to our approach than just repeating our opponent's arguments in an annoying, nasally voice.
First there was fear, then confusion and ignorance, but now we face something even more dangerous in the fight against AIDS, complacency. I'm Sharon Stone, and I want to make something very clear. AIDS is not over. Yes, we've made remarkable progress, and now there are treatments that can extend lives, but this is one tough, smart, nasty virus. It is infecting more people every year.
Over time, HIV can become resistant to the new medications designed to fight it. That's why AMFAR, the American Foundation for AIDS Research, is so important. AMFAR pushes the envelope, funding cutting-edge research and working toward solutions that will offer real freedom to people living with AIDS. It's not easy work, and it's not inexpensive. We need your help to make sure it continues. Call 1-800-39-AMFAR. 1-800-39-AMFAR. In the fight against AIDS, we've bought time. More research will buy answers.
I'm Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio with Mark Riley and Mark Maron. Now, were you worried that it wasn't 33 minutes past the hour? Because it is. Were you also worried about last year's tax cut and who was going to benefit from it? Well, you know what? We found out that President Bush, having declared his tax return, managed to save tens of thousands of dollars on his 2003 return. And Vice President, yes, I know. Mm-hmm. That was a Freudianism slip, I think.
See, the Jews are working
your
minds.
I know, that guy on your website is brainwashing me. Vice President Cheney and his wife, Lynn Cheney, have also saved a ton on their taxes as well.
The VP makes more than
The Cheneys were easily in the top tax bracket of 35%, right? And their effective tax rate fell to 20% last year from 29% the year before, and President Bush's federal income tax payment last year dropped to 15%. That is pretty low.
Nice work if you can get it, huh?
I would say so.
See, the VP made a lot more than the president.
Than the president, yeah.
I think he must invest.
Like almost $500,000.
He must invest better. It's, you know, it's this Halliburton.
I'll let you know what happens in mine. I've got one day to get my tax returns in.
Yeah?
To two countries. I have to get them into Britain and the U.S.
Is that tomorrow?
Yes.
To be in?
It'll be a long night.
The 15th is tomorrow.
Afraid
yes.
So, Mark.
The 15th is
you better
tomorrow.
Call somebody for an extension, pal.
Yeah, well.
You know, the IRS is just one of these weird Jewish conspiracies.
Oh, don't start. No,
another
start.
One.
I don't want to be audited. Thank you very much.
No, I have not done my taxes. I'll have to do them tonight.
Oh, well.
And early tomorrow.
Yeah.
You got till midnight tomorrow.
I do. I got till midnight tomorrow.
That's right. But then you have to show up at the post office and stand in line with the schlubs who are late.
The schlubs.
Schlubs.
How about the people that had better things to do? How about the people that didn't want to recognize how much money they owed, to put it off to the last minute? Our president holds off on making decisions
did
till the last minute. He said that.
Did he owe anything?
Yeah, he did. He did owe stuff. He paid, his federal income tax payment fell to $41,229, which is interesting, isn't it? His federal income tax payment was more than the average income of the country.
Well, he can write off the ranch now, I think, can he? Since it's
spent so much time there.
What can he write off? Can he write off living in the White House because he works there?
No,
like the mortgage? Who pays him?
What's that home office deduction?
He doesn't pay rent, right? So I guess maybe he can write off the ranch.
Check and get back to you. Okay, here's another weird
story. Like we
story.
Have that, yes. There's someone here. We'll get
story.
Right on that.
Here's a weird story out of California. Yeah. There is a school district, Westminster School District, the only one of more than 1,000 in California, that is resisting a state law that lets students and staff define their own gender. Now, the trustees of the school are worried because they say this could lead to a promotion of a transsexual agenda in the classroom, cross-dressing on campus, and boys and girls mixing in school bathrooms. What is the problem here? I thought we had, you know, a boy called It on the bestseller list for absolutely months. Are they're so worried that that transsexual kids are taking over the world? What is their problem?
I was under the impression that your gender is defined by what you have in your pants generally.
Not always.
No, but I mean, at that age, you know, no one's like, you know, having breast implants.
Haven't you watched Jerry Springer?
Yeah, haven't you been watching Extreme Makeover? I saw yesterday.
But these are kids.
Like I said, haven't you been watching Jerry Springer?
No, I don't watch Jerry Springer, Mark. I mean, I have a hard enough time dealing with reality. I can't deal with Jerry Springer. Why? What was on Jerry Springer?
Jerry Springer has kids on all the time that have, you know, transgender issues.
Anyway, I just think it's interesting.
Maybe
this is
the only transsexual in some small town in Tennessee.
No, but I mean, the idea that this is going to lead to a slippery slope is ridiculous.
Look, of course it's ridiculous.
Kid wants to,
I want to know what the transsexual agenda is.
They don't say
well,
that.
Hold on, let me go to Jew Watch.
We've got the liberal agenda.
I got to go to Jew Watch and see if it's part of the Jew conspiracy.
Well, certainly uptight. I thought we had the stranglehold and uptightness over there in the UK.
Orange County? But, are you kidding? It's on this weird sort of like conservative holdouts in a land of heathens.
And they're talking about losing $7.8 million in federal funding. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
For the transsexual agenda?
Well, they think that parents are going to be, conservative parents are going to get angry and move out and they'll lose their property taxes. Is that what they're worried about?
No, they are going to get, they get state funding to the tune of $7.8 million, and if they don't change this, they won't get the money.
Oh, so if they don't say, okay, kids, take the dresses off, boys.
No, no, if they don't say, okay, kids can identify themselves any way they please.
Well, you know, the only good thing in this school district is the only one of 1,056 in California resisting the state law. So they are definitely in the minority.
Only in California.
The transsexual agenda.
Well, you know, it's out there, the transsexual
agenda. Has the governor found out about this yet?
He's part of it.
Is he back from Hawaii?
He's allowed it to happen.
I think he might allow an exemption for the school.
He's allowed the transsexual agenda to happen because there was that one weird, you know, encounter with a prostitute 20 years ago, and it wasn't clear whether she was
Okay, here's another thing that I really love. Scottish actor Ewan McGregor said that he is going off on a round-the-world trip by motorbike, okay, and he's going to have it filmed as a documentary, and he's leaving his wife and two small children behind, and they are, he said, fully behind us. They understand. I say, Ewan, nice work if you can get it. I mean, hey, who doesn't want to have a kind of premature midlife crisis? He's 33 and go around the world on a motorbike. Cool, and leave your wife and two kids behind. Sounds great.
I guess he's between jobs.
Doesn't this fall under the who cares file? I mean,
interesting. I think it kind of raises all sorts of issues between men and women. How much freedom do you give your husband, especially if you're the wife stuck at home with two kids?
If he makes $20 million a picture and he's leaving you in a house with his pool,
all the slack he wants.
Yeah, that's the point,
isn't it? That so I earn more money and you're at home with the kids, so I get to do what I want. I mean, hey, why doesn't she leave the kids with somebody and go off with him on a motorbike? That would be the cool thing to do.
Maybe she will.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to find out. Well, I would.
Yeah.
I would.
I'm away from my wife right now, and maybe she is going off on a motorbike. I don't know what she's doing, and if I think about it too much, I'll be in trouble.
Uh-oh.
I get a little... Do you ever get jealous, man?
Hmm?
Are you a jealous guy?
Sometimes. You know, I was more jealous when I was younger.
Yeah, me too.
You get older, you stop
getting
that.
You know what it is?
Something.
It's about mathematics. You know, because
I flunked math.
No, I'm not a mathematical guy. But I started to think I've been with her a long time, and we've had sex hundreds of times. Okay, mm-hmm. Really, if I was to really think about it. So I started thinking so if she goes out and has sex with a guy once, some other guy, I'm still winning.
It depends how great it is, I suppose, that one.
Well, no, it's
are you gonna, are you gonna let that
just
run
on a numbers
to,
level.
But are you going to let that run up to the number of times you've had sex with her? In other words, you still winning.
No, this is how I rationalize the fear of some sort of random encounter or if her defenses break down and she does. But she's really not that kind of person.
Okay, so
she's out there building tables and weed whacking the yard and stuff. She's completely butch.
But you know what? I know what you're doing, Mark. Man.
Yeah,
I know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're figuring maybe she'll stray, and then you come into a revenge scenario. How am I going to get even with her if she strays?
Hey,
and then I go on the bike ride only with three women, and a tent.
Yep.
You got to be kidding! I would go on that bike ride. I mean, if it were you, it was somebody else's wife, or with a woman saying, "I'm leaving the kids behind, going off," everybody would be on her like a ton of bricks. There was this woman who went off to the North Pole and left her kids behind, and she was like a social pariah. How come it's okay to have a fun on a bike if you're a guy? I want to be on a bike.
Well, I mean, women in the WNBA leave their kids all the time.
But wasn't she
to
like
go
the
on bike?
First
no,
woman?
To go on basketball.
Give me a happy anytime.
And they don't make any money.
So, our morning devotional is coming.
Is it time for the morning devotional?
We already did it. Why am I reading this?
Oh.
We're taking your calls. Are we taking calls, John? We're taking your calls at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270. And we'll be back in a second. ¶¶
Air America Radio, under suspicion of the Department of Homeland Security.
Everybody feels this way.
Every 6 minutes, a woman dies somewhere in the world due to a botched illegal abortion. And just when you think it can't get any worse, you find out that anti-abortion politics in the U.S. are responsible. Hi, I'm Lisa Loeb, and I'm a feminist because I believe in a woman's right to reproductive freedom. That freedom is under attack right now, right here at home, and U.S. policies are endangering the lives of women in poor countries around the world. It's time to change that. Join me in the March for Women's Lives on April 25th in the nation's capital. Come help us make it the biggest protest that Washington, D.C. has ever seen. Women are 51% of the population. Let's show them that we're powerful. We're united, and we're mad. For more information, go to feminist.org. That's feminist.org. It's time to make some noise.
I know, being a college freshman is supposed to be tough, but let me tell you about my schedule this semester. All 18 credits. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I have American Lit at 8:05 a.m., and then I only have 15 minutes to get to my 9:15 Ethics and Value Theory class all the way across campus, then in the afternoon, Calculus 1. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, I have two lectures that go through lunch, Sociology of Families, then Intro to Microbiology. Pre-med. And finally, I have a double lab that ends around 9 p.m. Anyway, I just wanted to say thank you.
If a kid will do whatever it takes to get through college, what will you do to send her there? Please support the United Negro College Fund and call 1-800-332-UNCF, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Dear Calvary Hospital, my husband John was 56 when he was diagnosed with brain cancer. After 2 long years of unanswered wishes and vanished dreams, John was now at the end of his life. We had no idea of how to handle the process of dying. We were terrified and distraught until we went to Calvary Hospital. When John entered Calvary, it was only a matter of days before we saw the difference. Your expert doctors, nurses, technicians, your entire staff gave us the attention we had never had. Medically, emotionally, and spiritually, you taught us how to handle John's death. We weren't afraid anymore. In the last few weeks of John's life, he lived. Yours truly, Lori Hathorn.
This is Frank Calamari, president of Calvary Hospital. Insurance companies do not have the right to deny you Calvary's expert care. In fact, it's the law. So don't be denied. Call us at 718-518-2000 or visit calvaryhospital.org.
Unfiltered.
This administration has this problem of ignoring grassroots fundamentalists, allowing them to just build and swell, and then putting American troops in harm's way without anything at all.
Biz Winstead, Chuck D, and Rachel Maddow.
These guys are dying because of the irresponsible foreign policy.
Air America's Unfiltered. Weekdays 9 to noon on Air America Radio.
Hi, it's Mark Maron here. It's about 15 before the hour. I'm here with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America. We're going to take your calls at 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. Now it's time to reach out. My name's Mark, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
The cross between singing and
yeah.
Well, George W., I saw you at the meeting last night, man, and you were present. You were definitely, you know, in the present. I'll give you that. But when you refuse to admit to making any mistakes, I have to say, I mean, I don't want to take anyone's inventory here, but I wasn't seeing a lot of humility, all right? George, you are a case of self-will run wild, or maybe even Dick Cheney's self-will run wild. But either way, I think you're experiencing a sober bottom. You might not know it yet, but it happens in sobriety. And don't count on the White House press corps to take your personal inventory, because they are not up to the task. They are afraid, but I'll take it. And I say you've got to get on the stick. You've got to engage in your recovery. You know, first things first, one day at a time. Keep it simple. You know, God doesn't wake up and think he's you when you're thinking about, all the slogans. So...
There you go. Have a sober day, and please, you got to take responsibility for George W. George W.
Whose bottom was he touching?
That was Schwarzenegger, I think, is the bottom toucher. I'd like to see that
lawsuit.
I don't think Bush has ever been accused of touching bottoms. He has been accused of hitting bottoms, but not touching bottoms.
Okay, all right.
So it's time to go to the phones.
Oh, good.
Let's go to one. Let's go first to Diana, who's calling us from Los Angeles. Good morning.
Morning.
How you doing?
Ashcroft is clearly lying, and people have forgotten because they just have this vague feeling, but they can't nail it. But remember, go back to what you saw. Within days of the attack in New York, all 19 suicide killers, their photographs were on the front page of every paper in this country. Well, how did the FBI get their photographs? They got them from 70 open cases. They got them from an FBI informant living with two of the hijackers in San Diego. So if the field
is that
guys,
true?
He wasn't living with them, was he? He tipped them off.
Yes.
He was living with them?
Yes.
Wow, we've got to get some information. Where's our research?
Living with them?
Yes.
Okay, well, we'll follow that one up, Diana. Thank you.
All right, Diana, thanks for the call. You know, that's interesting.
I had heard.
There's
so much to know.
Contact. I didn't know that they had lived. That the guy had lived with.
I didn't. I thought that he observed them. I thought the two hijackers were living together, and that he reported on their going off to nightclubs and bars and stuff like that. But I don't remember reading anywhere that they lived together.
Yeah, can we talk to Rich? Chris, can you put Rich on?
Yeah, let's talk to Rich.
Hey, Rich, are you there?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man. What's going on?
All right. Good morning. Yeah.
Good morning.
Where are you?
I'm in the Bronx.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Yeah, just wondering about that that performance last night.
Yeah.
How do you like it?
Free fall.
Huh?
Oh, it surpassed my expectations.
I think it surpassed everybody, probably. That's not saying a lot, though.
Probably surpassed Bush's.
Yeah, well, you know, the bar is underground by now. But, he had an opportunity, though, to at least come out with something resembling an apology.
Yeah.
And he completely avoided that.
Yeah, and what does that make you think?
He's a sociopath.
Wow.
So
I'd like to get a clinical psychiatrist to really assess, you know, a lot of Bush's activities. You might be right, man. Thanks for calling.
I'd be afraid to go there.
Oh, yeah.
Rich, thanks a lot for calling.
It just showed he was actually an incredibly smooth professional. That was acting, man. That was really, that was a performance out there last
what,
night.
What, Bush? But
yes.
It wasn't that smooth. I mean, it really wasn't that smooth.
Mostly it was smooth. I mean, he was rattled. He kept on going. I mean, you could see he'd been trained and coached.
But you could see he was reading.
Yeah. I mean, they all read. Everybody reads.
I know, but it's like I just don't think it was that smooth.
Can they put a teleprompter up at a White House news conference?
Yeah.
That's a scary.
They can't.
They did decide ahead of time who was going to be able to ask questions, right?
But I guess if he had an opening speech, I didn't notice if they had the screens there. But I mean,
he had a 12-minute opening.
Yeah, I didn't notice if they were there.
Well, longer than that, even, I think. But he had on a lectern, he had actually written stuff. He had things on front of him, and he could probably see something over on the teleprompter. But you asked if it was scripted, who they went to.
In other words, was it decided ahead of time which reporters and in what
almost,
order they were
almost. I think there was a pool of people that were allowed to ask questions. And then he could go around and ask. I was dying for him to come out with some nicknames because when David Gregory stood up and you could see on the screen, you sit on the
David
crawl,
yeah.
David Gregory go, well, Dave. I wanted to come out with well, Poochie. He didn't come out with any nicknames. I was actually quite disappointed.
I want to talk to George in Harlem, can we?
Yeah, let's talk to George.
I didn't mean to cut you off, Mark.
No,
George, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
What's up? How are you?
The first two times I heard you, you've made your major issue when you opened up. Anti-Semitic or anti-Semitism,
yeah.
A major thing.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to see you also put racism in this country just as important as anti-Semitism.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that's been going a whole lot longer, and I think the African people throughout the diaspora would like to know that you consider racism in this country just as important to us as you feel anti-Semitism is to you.
Well, let me handle that one, George.
As a black person, let me say that
racism is as important. And see, one of the things I don't like to do is get into comparative pain.
Right.
The pain of anti-Semitism, the pain of racism, neither should exist. It's as simple as that. And many of the people who practice one practice both.
Right.
And, you know, that was, in fact, the basis on which there was a long-standing alliance between the African-American and Jewish community.
Yep.
Was because the same people, the Strom Thurmonds and the Klansmen and all these other people throughout history, lined up against Jews and black people simultaneously. And many of the people, including the guy that does Jew Watch, I'm sure, doesn't differentiate a great deal.
And a lot of times, once you confront these people, you know, they're pretty cowardly people, and they don't, you know, they don't really, you know, engage with you. You know, and certainly, I think, you know, racism is a horrific, you know, reality. And the only weapon I really have against racism or anti-Semitism is comedy and humor. And, you know, and sometimes I may, you know, trivialize things that I shouldn't, but it certainly, it's all horrifying to me.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Dana. Is Dana ready in Minnesota? Wow, we got somebody calling from Minnesota. Good morning, Dana.
Hi.
Hi.
I really am glad you all are here, and I listen to you every day, and it's like this one guy that called in said he sits and plays on his computer solitary and listens to the radio all day now, and that's what I do. But anyway, I guess I really thought you were kind of light on that FBI agent, because to me, like that one woman said, I mean, within, you know, days of the World Trade Center being blown into, the FBI all of a sudden had all this information. I mean, it's like they're totally incompetent until right after, and then they're suddenly competent, and that makes no sense to me.
Dana, I just remind people, you're making a reference to a previous caller who said that within days of the 9/11 attacks, the newspapers had front page pictures of the suicide bombers, and she said that they must have come from FBI files.
Right, right. So, I mean, I've wondered this in my own self, too, that, you know, it just seemed like all of a sudden they had information. I mean, it's like, I guess I can't buy the fact that the FBI is that incompetent, and that
Really? You can't buy the fact that a government agency might be incompetent? That
have you been in the post office or the Department of Motor Vehicles?
Well, okay.
State agency.
I'll give you that. But I still think that, I just think that there's a lot more that they're not telling us. I just really do. And I just can't buy the fact that they're that incompetent. And I just wondered if you noticed last night when Bush was talking how very uncomfortable Karl Rove and Condi looked sitting there.
Yeah.
Condi kind of always looks uncomfortable.
They call those two the brain in the White House. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thanks
hey, we got
calling,
a caller calling from upstate New York. He's been calling frequently, actually. I don't know if you realize that.
Is this who I think it is?
Well, yeah, but he's been calling me. He calls his other friends. Bill Clinton is working on his book, and it's been reported that he likes to call people to read some of the stuff from his book. And for some reason, you know, he's been calling us, and he's calling again today. William from Chappaqua, are you on the line?
I'm here. I've been doing some rewrites from chapter 3.
since yesterday?
Sorry?
Since yesterday you've been rewriting?
I've been up all night.
Uh-oh.
What do you got?
Define up.
Well, can I read for you?
Yeah, I'd
please.
Love to have you. How long is it going to take?
I'll be brief.
How long is that?
At the time, I was distracted from the fight against Al-Qaeda by the politically motivated sexual witch hunt against me.
Yeah.
Specifically, I was distracted by the endless questions aimed at me and by my endless attempts to avoid telling the truth. I was also distracted by the sight of Ashley walking into the Oval Office.
This is Ashley from yesterday?
Ashley was now wearing only brief white panties. She had signaled her desire by removing her shirt and skirt and by leaning back on the couch.
Bill, you're kind of slow writer, aren't you?
Well, I like this part. I think this part works. I think this is really the heart of the book so far, and I need to do it justice.
How many pages do you have written?
Pretty much this is it.
That's a $6.6 million paragraph, folks. His whole advance squandered on two paragraphs.
Squandered? This is good stuff, dude.
Are we ever going to get to the climax of this scene?
Yeah.
I'd like to. Sort of a recurring problem for me.
All right, well, when you finish it up, give us a call back.
Actually, I have to go anyway. I'll be right there, honey.
I would say that if he's that...
go.
Oh, thanks, Bill.
Yeah, the master calls.
If he's that slow, the Kerry crowd can stop worrying that the Bush might be ready and distract from his election campaign.
Okay, can we talk to Andrew in New Jersey?
Sure.
He's got some
Hello.
Hi, Andrew. How you doing? What's going on?
All right. First of all, I want to thank you guys and gals for doing a wonderful job in bringing the truth to the American people, finally, from the right-wing media.
Oh, great.
Now, what I want to say, what I saw last night was a perfectly scripted movie by a grade B actor.
B actor, exactly.
Actually, I would have, I'd have grade him as a C or a D actor.
Yeah, I didn't think he pulled it off.
Now, what you saw, first of all, was a robot, I believe. Karl Rove was pulling the string, and Karen Hughes put the words in the mouth.
Do you think he's hypnotized or medicated or on some?
Well, actually, I think actually what happened is he's only probably got about a 40% brain capacity going. the other 60% went out to lunch yesterday, and Cheney, as far as I'm concerned, ought to finally tell the truth to the American people.
That's right. I think you're right, Andrew. We've got to go to a break.
We've got to run, but thanks a lot for that.
Thanks for your call, Andrew. Sorry to cut you off.
Wow.
40%.
Well, you know, we've gotten people saying sociopaths, 40% of his brain. This is a scary scenario. You don't want to miss our final hour this morning. We'll have a conversation with 9/11 panel member and former Watergate prosecutor Richard Benveniste. Plus, does someone in Florida want to whack Donald Rumsfeld? All coming up on Air America Radio.
The Public Theater in New York presents a play written and directed by Tim Robbins, Embedded.
A savagely witty, very smart, very screwball, and ultimately very chilling comedy.
San Francisco Chronicle.
Embedded.
Wildly entertaining. You'll find more truth about war on this stage than you'll find in most newspapers.
BBC.
Embedded.
Poisonous.
Who's that from?
The New Republic.
Whoa.
Embedded.
Savagely witty and incisive, uncompromising.
L.A. Times.
Embedded.
Swift, savage, sharply clever lampoon.
New York Star Ledger.
Embedded.
Bad taste.
Who's that from?
Fox News.
Well.
Embedded.
Excellent, timely, and compellingly cutting satire, a tribute to the finest traditions of drama and political comedy.
Democracy Now.
Embedded by Tim Robbins at the Public Theater.
212-239-6200.
Order tickets now.
212-239-6200.
Order tickets now.
212-239-6200.
You're listening to 1190 WLIP New York, the home of Air America Radio.
Coming up next on Morning's Edition, novelist Alice Randall takes on America's racial divide, plus a 9/11 panel member who takes no shorts. Coming up here on Air America Radio, but first, the news at this hour.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. President Bush last night was asked twice on whether he made any mistakes during the course of his administration with regard to 9/11 or Iraq. On the issue of 9/11, the nation's chief executive believes he would have been a lot better off if there had been an Office of National Homeland Security.
There are some things I wish we'd have done when I look back. I mean, hindsight's easy. It's easy for a president to stand and say, now that I know what happened, it would have been nice there were certain things in place. For example, a Homeland Security Department.
President Bush now feels the office would have been useful after he was initially opposed to its creation. Reaction abounds over President Bush's address to the American people during a news conference last night. Most of it has been somewhat partisan. The leadership of the Democrats, Terry McAuliffe, felt Bush did a poor job in defending his record.
I thought it was a disgrace, his performance. It was the worst performance I've ever seen, and I think anyone in America watching it has to wonder who is in control of this government and what are they doing. And then he said that we may have to send more troops at a time we don't have more troops to send.
Democratic Party Chair Terry McAuliffe. It seems that someone in Washington is just not telling the truth. The Washington Post reports this morning that by the time a CIA briefer gave President Bush the infamous Bin Laden determined to strike memo, both the president and Vice President Cheney had received repeated warnings and reports of al-Qaeda's intention before the 9/11 attacks. The Post story raises questions on just who the American people should believe. It's based on the newly declassified information released yesterday by a nonpartisan commission. In other news, making headlines, testimony continues before the panel investigating the 9/11 attacks. Robert Mueller, the head of the FBI, and CIA Director George Tenet appear today. In a speech yesterday, Mueller defended the FBI against the commission's criticism that it had failed for years to respond to the threat of terrorism. Mueller admitted there were things the agency could have done better, but said it was committed to...
The very best of Jackson Browne, the first ever 2-CD compilation assembled by Jackson Browne himself.
What you see, I hear that cry.
32 digitally remastered hits and favorites spanning his entire career, including Running on Empty,
Running on Empty, Running on Empty,
and Here Come Those Tears Again. The very best of Jackson Browne, a brand new collection that will last you a lifetime. The very best of Jackson Browne also includes Lawyers in Love and Somebody's Baby. On sale now at Tower Records and Tower.com, because your collection is never complete.
The culture war's latest front is a small school district in Orange County, California. The board of the Westminster School District is the only one of 1,056 in California to reject a state anti-discrimination law that lets students and staff define their own gender. The board has cited Christian principles for its decision, which may lead to the loss of $7.8 million in funding and a possible state takeover of the district. There's an effort afoot to change the atmosphere of the most expensive room of any given hospital in the country. That room is the intensive care unit, which was originally designed and continues to remain the conduit for sustaining life at all costs. But healthcare experts are well aware of that often the most expensive room in the hospital is where a considerable number of patients spend their final hours. About 20% of all U.S. deaths occur in the ICU. The healthcare experts are trying to make those facilities more comfortable. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Our Canadian vacation with Marriott Hotels was the best our family ever had.
You too can have a remarkable Canadian holiday with Marriott Hotels, one of the most trusted names in travel. And it's easy, especially with Marriott's Look No Further Best Rate Guarantee.
Just check Marriott out at www.visitmarriottscanada.com and see which fabulous Canadian destination is best for you. Book it and you're on your way.
It's as easy as clicking on www.visitmarriottcanada.com. And before you know it, you'll be speaking like me, eh?
Welcome to Tape 5, The Backpack. Let's say your child comes home from high school. They did something good. It's time to give them the backpack. Now you try the backpack. That's it. And pat, pat, pat.
It's really not that difficult. Encourage them. Get them to graduate. Don't drop out on your kids. For a free brochure, call 877-4-A-KID. That's 877-F-O-R-A-K-I-D. This message brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
First there was fear, then confusion and ignorance. But now we face something even more dangerous in the fight against AIDS. Complacency. I'm Sharon Stone, and I want to make something very clear. AIDS is not over. Yes, we've made remarkable progress, and now there are treatments that can extend lives. But this is one tough, smart, nasty virus. It is infecting more people every year. Over time, HIV can become resistant to the new medications designed to fight it. That's why AMFAR, the American Foundation for AIDS Research, is so important. AMFAR pushes the envelope, funding cutting-edge research and working toward solutions that will offer real freedom to people living with AIDS. It's not easy work, and it's not inexpensive. We need your help to make sure it continues. Call 1-800-39-AMFAR. 1-800-39-AMFAR. In the fight against AIDS, we've bought time. More research will buy answers.
Mom, can you take me to Supercuts?
Excuse me? Since when do you care what you look like?
Seriously, Mom, I need a haircut.
Is it a girl? Oh, my Lord, you're already into girls. My little boy's growing up. Oh, soon you'll be in college.
Mom, I'm 7.
And then you'll marry this girl, who we haven't even met yet, and be a big corporate executive. Oh, you look so good in a suit.
Are you going to take me to Supercuts, or should I call a cab?
And you'll be bringing the girl. grandkids on the
weekend. Let's face it, your kids are growing up whether you like it or not. That's why Supercuts promises to give them a look you'll both love, usually quicker than it takes to get them to brush their teeth.
Dad, can you take me to Supercuts?
Supercuts? Jeez, where's the time gone? I mean, you were just a little baby, and now you're in school, growing hair.
Supercuts. We know how it is.
With over 1,700 locations, it's never been more convenient to let Supercuts take care of you and your hair. Call 1-800-SUPERCUTS or log on to supercuts.com for a location nearest you. And while you're there, check out the latest episode of The Mop Squad.
Good morning. I'm Mark Riley, along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Maron, here on Air America Radio. It's 7 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning's Edition.
Today, we've got the liberal agenda on tap, plus black men and white women will violate some taboos. But right now, we've got with us a Democratic appointment to the commission investigating the September 11th attacks on the U.S., Richard Benveniste has been generating headlines and helping Americans find out a lot about U.S. intelligence before September 11th. He's going to hear more testimony today, but he's taking a few minutes first to join us on the telephones. He is with the law firm of Mayer, Brown, Rowe, and Moore. Mr. Benveniste, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being with us. Yesterday, your panel heard testimony from both Thomas Picard and John Ashcroft. And they told two radically different stories about whether the Attorney General had a concern about terrorism. Who do you think was telling the truth?
Well, we had a documentary record. The Attorney General provided a list of his objectives, which are tied to budget requirements. There were five major objectives. Counterterrorism was not listed among them. He said that he had simply followed through on the previous administration's goals and objectives, but noted that in the prior administration, counterterrorism was mentioned several times in those goals. So people can make up their own minds about it. There was a factual conflict in the testimony. Mr. Picard, who was acting director of the FBI during the late summer of 2001, said that he had briefed the General Ashcroft from time to time, always starting with a counterterrorism update, and that Attorney General Ashcroft told him after a couple of briefings that he didn't want to hear any more about it. General Ashcroft said that that was not so. So people will have to make up their own minds as to why Mr. Picard would have falsely ascribed such a statement to Attorney General Ashcroft, or whether, in fact, he was telling the truth.
Okay, Mr. Benveniste, I'm not so good at making up my mind this hour of the morning, but one thing you pointed out straight off at the top was that counterterrorism was not in the list of objectives that John Ashcroft had. And given that Thomas Picard, the ex-FBI guy, said that he felt that John Ashcroft had brushed him off when he asked to bring up terrorism, it seems to me is that you're leaning towards Thomas Picard rather than John Ashcroft.
Well, I think the facts are subject to interpretation, and people will make up their own minds using their own common sense and their own two eyes.
Okay. How about the fact that George Bush and Dick Cheney are going to be testifying together? President Bush brought it up, or had it brought up for him, rather, at his press conference last night. Why is it important to get George Bush on his own?
Well, we had such difficulty arranging for this. You will recall that at first the president indicated he would only meet with 2 out of the 10 members of the commission, and then only for an hour. Subsequently, because the commission unanimously rejected that position, finding no reason to exclude 8 out of the 10 members, the president reversed course and allowed us how he would, without the time limitation, meet with the entire commission, but that he would insist on having a dual appearance between himself and the vice president, who we had also requested.
Does it strike you at all, Mr. Bimini, sorry, that George Bush is sort of worried about his own potential performance, and isn't it a little bit weird that he only wants to go up there with his deputy?
Well, I will agree that it's unusual that that he has made this request.
Unusual,
but look, we're running out of time. We don't have a heck of a lot of time. He is the President of the United States, and he's agreed to meet with all of us. I think we can direct our questions appropriately to the individual whom we wish to have answer the question.
Mr. Benveniste, I'm curious about why the 9/11 panel seems to be issuing small reports almost in dribs and drabs. There was a report that was issued that was kind of critical of the FBI. Why are they doing it piecemeal instead of seemingly waiting until everything's done and then putting out one big thing?
Well, I think it's very helpful to those who are paying close attention to our work to receive periodic installments as we have these open hearings of the staff work that has preceded all of this. We've done over 1,000 interviews. We have an incredibly talented staff of over 60 full-time individuals. I must say that if I were applying for the staff rather than being appointed commissioner, I probably would not make the grade. These are very, very accomplished people who are experts in the field. And so their accumulated work forms the basis, along with the commission's participation in important interviews, for these interim reports. The interim reports will then form the basis for our final report.
Mr. Bimini, you've issued a report already on your assessment so far of the intelligence community. Are you going to issue one on Bush's performance after he gives it and his decision-making relative to 9/11? There goes your doorbell.
Oh, actually, that's my cell phone.
Oh, okay.
I'm not too
awake. Just sounds like a doorbell.
Will you be issuing a report about Bush's performance and his decision-making, and what's your assessment so far?
I don't think we will, just as a matter of protocol, just as we hadn't with respect to former President Clinton and Vice President Gore, issue an immediate report. These are confidential reports.
But in the end, will you do that, even if you don't do it straight away?
In the end, I think we will have an assessment.
Okay. Any idea when?
Well, our final report is due the 26th of July, due to be made public by that time.
And how confident are you that the administration is going to clear everything so that you actually can get that out and published for the American people?
You know, I think they will be motivated to do that. There have been so many bumps in the road where we haven't gotten what we've requested. Everyone is focused on this date. The only issue for the administration and its review is whether we have included information that is truly national security information that must be protected. And that's the only reason for the review and would be the only reason for taking issue with any portion of it.
Mr. Bimini, we've seen the finally released presidential daily briefing that you had to argue to be released from the Bush administration, and we had Bush's press conference last night. In both things, we can see that the administration is sticking to its line that Saddam Hussein was capable of attacking the United States. Have you or anybody on your panel seen any evidence that Saddam Hussein intended to attack the United States?
Well, Saddam Hussein is hardly relevant to anything that we're doing. We're dealing with 9/11, and Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11. The only time that Saddam Hussein comes into our fact-finding is in the immediate aftermath of 9/11, when there is considerable evidence that certain individuals in the Defense Department were pushing the president to consider invading Iraq as a response to 9/11, and that was rejected. It was clearly pretextual, since there was absolutely no evidence that Saddam had anything to do with 9/11.
But yet,
although I must say that the American people, according to certain polls, seem to get that idea as the result of confusing the issue to some extent in statements that emanated from White House sources.
Right, because the Bush administration was very focused on Iraq, and it was mentioned again in the press conference last night. I mean, have you seen any evidence that Iraq, that they should have been that focused on Iraq?
There was no evidence, and I think Secretary Powell provided us information. Bob Woodward, in his book, was very clear about it. He had virtually unlimited access to the president and his cabinet and close advisors. There was no evidence to suggest that Saddam Hussein had anything to do with 9/11.
Mr. Benveniste, are you at all surprised that President Bush now appears to be embracing the work of your panel, where before he didn't appear that he even wanted to fund it?
You know, I've been in Washington for over 30 years. I have a high threshold for surprise.
I'm sorry to go back on this one more time and look as though I'm kind of, you know, beating you up, Mr. Benveniste, because I know that you would win if it should come to that. But you said that Iraq didn't have anything to do with 9/11. But should the Bush administration have been as obsessed as it was with Iraq at all?
Well, that's not really our issue. If we were in a restaurant, I would tell you, not my table.
Okay. But I thought you might have an opinion on it.
I might have an opinion, but quite frankly, my opinions on issues beyond the scope of our work, which is rather broad, I have not been making publicly, because I don't want to detract from the fact that this commission is a bipartisan commission.
Okay, Mr.
Benveniste. And our work transcends the immediacy of this political climate. Each of the commissioners on this commission recognize that the responsibility of this commission transcends these temporal political storms. This is a work that must withstand the scrutiny of time. We must, as you had seen with the trying to get this PDB of August 6, 2001, declassified and made public, our job is twofold. First, to get a definitive history of what occurred pre-9/11 and immediately post-9/11, and produce that to the American people. The second part of our responsibility is to make recommendations that will make our country safer.
Name your restaurant. Pick any table you like. I'll only share it with our listeners. I'll go off the record with you.
Richard Benveniste, we thank you so much for being with us this morning.
My pleasure.
We really appreciate it.
Well, good luck to you all.
All right. Richard Benveniste, he is, of course, a member of the 9/11 panel. He's with the law firm of Mayer, Brown, Rowe, and Maw.
I had to sit them one out, you know.
Why?
Because it just seemed too serious to me.
Too serious to you?
Yeah, a little bit.
Gotcha. Coming up, the presidential daily briefing, Mark Maron style, plus somebody's cutting back on their advertising. We'll tell you who here on Air America Radio.
Air America Radio. Always pledge drive free.
Something strange is happening at Liberty Science Center.
Weird.
Strange liquids are taking on strange shapes.
Strange metals are straightening themselves, and there's strange glass. Even a bowling ball won't shatter.
Or will it?
So cool.
It's all part of Strange Matter, a hands-on exhibition about the amazing world of material science. Find out about the science behind materials in objects you use every day, like athletic shoes and packaging. And find out about amazing new materials coming soon.
Mom, did you see this? What is it?
Get strange. Come to Liberty Science Center now through May 2nd. Visit www.lsc.org or call 201-200-1000. Strange Matter was produced by the Materials Research Society and is presented locally through the generosity of Fleet.
Liberty Science Center is close to home at exit 14B off the New Jersey Turnpike in Liberty State Park, Jersey City.
Liberty Science Center, where wonders never cease.
Hi, this is Sharon Stone, and I'd like to thank you for your continued support in the fight against AIDS. I'm the campaign chairman for AMFAR, the American Foundation for AIDS Research, and together With your help, we can do the kind of cutting-edge research that is helping people with HIV live enriched, extended lives. But AIDS is not over. The current drugs are not an answer. More people are contracting AIDS every year. We need your help. We need a vaccine. It's not easy work, and it's not inexpensive. Let's not let this be our legacy for our children. Call 1-800-39-AMFAR. In the fight against AIDS, we've bought time. More research will buy answers. So please call 1-800-39-AMFAR. Thank you.
Chris Rock is back.
That's right.
First, he brought the pain.
I think all the bullets should cost $5,000. Every time somebody gets shot to the head, he must have been something.
Then, he got bigger and blacker.
Women, 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 what do y'all want? Everything. Do you know what they want? Food, sex, time. That's it.
Now, for the first time in 4 years.
The white man thinks he's losing the country. Yeah. If y'all losing, who's winning?
Chris Rock takes the stage.
Drug dealers don't sell drugs. Drugs sell themselves.
For a new HBO comedy event.
I never heard a crack dealer go, man, how am I going to get rid of all this crack?
Chris Rock, never scared.
I love ya!
Premier Saturday, April 17th at 10 p.m., 9 central, only on HBO.
I'm out of here!
Chris Rock returns to HBO in April for the first time in 4 years with an all-new stand-up comedy event. Chris Rock, Never Scared, premieres Saturday, April 17th at 10 p.m., 9 central, only on HBO.
Listen to Air America Radio whenever and wherever you want. We're available 24/7 on the internet. Just hit our website, www.airamericaradio.com. All you need to do is complete a quick online registration. Once that's done, you're ready to take us live. Air America uses the Real One player for our streaming. www.airamericaradio.com. Streaming now, live, 24/7. www.airamericaradio.com.
It is 23 past the hour. We're taking your calls at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270. But first, it's time to reveal the top secret contents of the intelligence community's presidential daily briefing for Wednesday, April 14th. Okay, here we go. Today's PDB is called American Voters Determined to Strike in U.S. Mr. President, we have noted patterns of suspicious activity indicating that American voters are determined to strike at the very heart of this administration, possibly as early as this November. They may be planning to use your own mistakes to attack you. All right, so be aware. Our agents have picked up an alarming amount of chatter. Much of it is coming from an organization called Air America. Okay. Many of these plotting voters maintain a support structure called the Democratic Party that could aid attacks. Rival fringe elements under a shadowy figure called Nadar or Nader also exist, but lack means. Still, any dissension within the ranks of our enemies should be exploited. The ultimate goal of the attacks may be to gain release of the Bill of Rights, currently being held in custody by the Attorney General. That's powerful. That's our secret, top secret daily
top
briefing
secret.
For today. We got hold of it through a leak in the White House.
The only leak.
So, dude, let's talk about this, you guys. This Democratic Club ad in Florida. The Republicans are cried foul over a newspaper ad by a local Democratic Club that said Defense Secretary Rumsfeld should be put up against a wall and someone should pull the trigger.
Yeah, this is the St. Petersburg Democratic Club, and this was an ad in a weekly paper in Gulfport.
Delicate, isn't it?
Delicate, yeah.
Very subtle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's about as subtle as saying that, you know, anything happens, they should suspend the election. That's subtle, too.
That was like, that's hardcore. Was that in the paper today again?
No, it wasn't. I just remembered it from...
But they were saying it like, you know, they were sort of inviting it. Hey, I'm just saying if anything should happen,
maybe
we could suspend those elections, you know?
Those pesky things.
We could keep this guy in charge forever. The emperor.
So, you know...
All hail.
In this article, even Kerry came down on this article. Kerry had nothing good to say about it. Actually said,
Kerry said something?
Yeah, he did.
Unbelievable.
He said it was outrageous and advised them to retract and apologize.
Nice of him to talk for, you know, for once
he
in the
last
3 weeks.
He needs to stick to words with one or two syllables, doesn't he, really, Mark?
Who, Kerry?
Yeah, he could do with some, like, riffing expertise.
No, I think he's a good riffer, but he needs to, you know, like, you know, come on, fire it up a little bit,
he's
man.
Not,
I mean,
he's a multisyllabic riffer. He's not catchy enough. By the way, I thought it was Rumsfeld who said of Iraq, we have our good days and our bad days.
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
And that was also, by the way, quoted in the ad. I mean, he said our good days and bad days, and then we should put them up against the wall, say it's a bad day, and pull the trigger.
Nice.
What is this, you know, who's behind this ad? It sounds like a...
The St. Petersburg Democratic Club.
That's it? What is that? Do we know? The Democratic Club?
They're still upset about those hanging chads.
Like 15 people down there, it's like, we're going to show them. We're the hardcore side of the Democratic Club down here.
But you know, the Republicans are going to have, like, 3 days where they're going to savagely roast anyone in the Democratic Party that does not call for the immediate removal and elimination of the St. Petersburg Democratic Club.
You think that's going to happen?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're going to jump up and say that this is treason. This is, God help us, sedition. I mean, they're going to say that this is the kind of thing that Democrats do to try and win office. They're going to call it reprehensible. They can call it all kinds of stuff.
Is it that big of a story? You don't think they're just going to...
Oh, they'll pick up on it. Wait till 12 o'clock.
Today?
Yeah.
Now, what about this thing that Bush, they're scaling back on their advertising? Did you read
that? Saving money. He's got 200 mil. He needs to save a little.
Yeah, but they came out with a ton of money, didn't they? They came out really hard against Kerry in the last couple of weeks, and in fact, it hasn't done a great deal. I mean, they thought it was going to wind him. In fact, in their polls, they'd be more or less even, Kerry and Bush.
You know what I don't understand? It's like, you know, how, like, easily manipulated and stupid are people that, like, you know, like, when an ad is released... That could actually change the sway of the response to the candidate. It's a commercial. I mean, it's like McDonald's commercial. How can a 30-second or a 60-second ad make people go, hey, wait, I ought to rethink this because clearly I didn't have this
but
information
they don't want
that
they
was
don't
paid
want
for
everybody.
By them to plant that seed in my brain about information they want me to have and exploit my desires and make me question my own instincts.
But that's because you're smart, okay?
That's how I open this, by saying, are people that stupid?
The Lee Atwater ad about Willie Horton did change the course of an election.
What it does is it affects people who are sitting on the fence, people who haven't made up their minds. They're the ones that they go for first.
People who haven't done any research at all and are just sitting there watching Jerry Springer.
That's right. Watching
they're like,
Jerry
you know,
Springer.
Oh, hey, hell, maybe I ought to rethink this.
That's right.
Or think about it once for the first time.
For the first time. And then when they think about it once for the first time, if that's what they hear.
But then the next ad comes out, they're like, oh, God, maybe I was wrong in thinking what I was supposed to think from that first ad.
And they ping and pong and ping and pong. And finally, the last ad that they see before they go to vote is the one that...
That's it.
It's all about keeping things simple. That, you know, people do make their minds up last minute, but it's all about if you talk in kind of very simple, not to say simplistic sentences, as Bush does, and keep the ideas simple and easy, people like that. Their lives are complicated enough already. They don't want to hear.
I'm good. Everyone else is bad.
Absolutely. Yep. We will stay the course. We will not waver. We will finish the job. That's all Bush speak. That's what people
That's
like
That's all
to
there
hear.
Is to it. That's
Kerry
simple,
has
honey.
To speak the initiative.
People want somebody to say, I'll give you a job.
No
never
way.
Mind finishing
yeah,
the
how
job.
About that? I'll give you a job, and I'm not going to waver on
it. Am I getting that you guys aren't feeling Kerry? Because we have to get it. We have to devote
get him on
some
the show.
Time.
I've got
to
call my buddy
well,
Jim.
That, but we also have to devote some time as to whether or not he's doing the job.
I think we should light him up.
Well, hey.
Like, get him all sparked up about
Why
something.
Why not? When we come back, No Stereotype is unchallenged in a conversation with author Alice Randall. And get your pens and pencils ready for the liberal agenda. This is Air America Radio, and we've got news on the half hour.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. In an exclusive interview on Air America's Morning Sedition, 9/11 panelist Richard Benveniste said it was up to Americans to form an opinion on who was telling the truth or lying about what they knew of terrorist activities. Benveniste made clear that U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft yesterday denied statements that he did not want to hear any more about terrorism just before the attacks. Both former FBI Director Louis Freeh and Interim Agency Director Thomas Picard declared declared Ashcroft was not interested. Washington Post reports this morning the Bush White House was well aware of terrorist activities based on CIA briefings long before the 9/11 attacks, this despite denials raised again last night in President Bush's White House news conference. The warnings were contained in the declassified statement released yesterday by the nonpartisan 9/11 Commission. U.S. Secretary General Kofi Annan says violence in Iraq will prevent his organization from reestablishing a major presence in the country anytime in the foreseeable future. Annan told reporters that violence has made it hard, even for small teams now in the country, to advise Iraqis on forming an interim government and to plan for elections early next year. And a federal hearing is on schedule for today on whether the government should begin allowing the import of cheaper AIDS drugs. Consumer advocates and AIDS groups say the recent decision by a pharmaceutical despite five times the price of anti-AIDS drugs, Norvir, has prompted the issue of cheaper drugs. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Air America Radio, where Siegfried is always welcome to love his roar. And the elephant is always the biggest clown at the circus.
Some people feel that their teeth appear too short or their smile too gummy. Dentists can sculpt the gum line so the teeth look longer. On the other hand, some patients have the opposite concern. Due to periodontal disease, their gums have receded and their teeth appear too long. When this is the case, your dentist may recommend gum grafting. Gum grafting is a surgical procedure where the dentist removes part of the gum from one area of the mouth. The next step is to graft it onto the area of the gum line that has receded. This procedure allows your teeth to have a more even, healthy look. Typically, only a local anesthetic is needed, and an over-the-counter pain reliever like acetaminophen is recommended after treatment. If you think your teeth look too long, then gum grafting may be an option for you. Contact your dentist to find out more information. For the ADA Dental Minute, I'm Dr. Maria Lopez-Howell. To find out more about your dental health, visit ADA online at ada.org.
Sue Ellicott with Air America Radio with Mark Maron and Mark Riley. We're taking calls from you at 1-866-303-AAR0. That's 1-866-303-2270. And right now we have a caller on the line who has something to say about this that George Bush said last night.
I thought it was very interesting that Charlie Dulford, who just came back, he's the head of the Iraqi Survey Group, reported some interesting findings from his recent tour there. And one of the things was he was amazed at how deceptive the Iraqis had been toward UNMOVIC and UNSCOM. Deceptive at hiding things. We knew they were hiding things. A country that hides something is a country that is afraid of getting caught.
Okay, Ian, what did you want to say about that?
Ricardo, I'm wondering why I heard the quote, and how come the presidential and vice presidential papers have been frozen if people who hide things are the people afraid of getting caught?
Good point.
And also, how come a number of the people of Bush's security advisors sit on the boards of defense contractors?
Because they've got the game fixed, my friend.
Oh, don't I know it? We watch America like our peculiar neighbor.
Peculiar neighbor? Like, what are they doing now?
Muscular, but peculiar.
I hear weird noises coming out of there.
I'm so glad that we didn't go to war. I'm so glad that we were smart enough not to. I was in New York last year, and I was saying that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11, and people looking all nervously at me.
You Canadian, you?
Yeah, right.
I know, all that liberal secularism and all that health care for everybody sitting up.
I got a question about that. Like, I was up in Canada recently, and the whole national health care thing. The thing I don't understand about national health care is why would anybody work? If you have health care coverage.
Do you want to know how much I pay a month for my health care?
Yeah, good. Make me jealous.
I pay $60 Canadian a month as a single payer.
Wow. $60
a month. Man, that sounds horrible. We don't want anything to do with that.
Hey, your cigars cost more than that.
I get to pick my own doctor. It doesn't cover medication. I have to pay for that myself, but I...
By the way, could you mail me some medication? I know it's cheaper
hey,
up there.
I'm from Vancouver. I could probably send you pot.
Well, I can't talk about this on the air. And
I also you can email him at mmarin@airamericaradio.com.
We got to put it to the producer.
I have one more question. How come Bush is the? How come Georgie is the only Bush with an accent?
Because he spent the longest time. I don't know. Because he's making it up.
That's why he goes back to his ranch so often. He's having accent lessons down there in Crawford.
Yeah, because he certainly can't talk very well.
I'm self-employed.
Speak
and I don't
very well.
He spent 8 months in Crawford over so far. You know, I'm self-employed. And I've kept 2 months a year off.
Yeah.
It must be nice.
Indeed. Nice work if you can get it.
Yeah, hey? Right. Ian, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Have a great day.
All right.
Listen to how happy the
Vancouver.
Canadian. The Canadian sounded so happy.
No, I'm so glad we're not in the war. I'm so glad.
He's just up there like $60 a month health care. He probably gets all he needs, you know, medication-wise.
And at peace with the world.
Yeah, they don't even lock their doors up there. There's not people with guns everywhere. And people from here are like, man, I'm nervous. What are we going to do?
Oh, yeah, my health care for a family and two kids is $18,000 a year.
Ooh, wow. What?
Yes.
Before
I faint.
Oh, how about Michael on the bottom in Ohio? No?
Michael.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Hello.
Hi, how are you? What's on your mind, buddy?
I'm good. I had a question regarding something that happened in, I believe it was July of 2003, and it seems this sort of gotten lost.
Let me get my fact book out for July. Okay,
all right.
Go ahead.
Well, this would be Joseph Wilson, Valerie Plame.
Right.
One of the things that I was curious about is that if that was, isn't that a federal offense? Isn't that what
outing the wife of someone. This is the story. This was
she's an agent, a knock agent, right?
Yeah, they're putting a committee together to investigate that.
Actually, I think they already have a committee, and they're supposed to be investigating, but when they come back with findings,
well, did they
knows.
Send the committee to Jamaica, or what? No, what are they doing? I mean, nobody said anything about this.
Well, they've been on the real down low, but they are supposedly, in fact, gathering evidence. I saw a story on this just the other day that asked the same question you did, like, what happened? What's going on with this situation? And this is of course, involves Robert Novak, the fable.
Yes, right.
And by the way, if you want to know exactly where all these people are, when I've been, I don't know if you've been, Sue, to any function at the White House.
Yes.
Any function, any party that they have at the White House,
it
doesn't matter.
I haven't been.
You've never been?
No, I was never asked to go. And when I showed up there, they were like, your name is?
Yeah. Well, when Bill Clinton was in the White House, he gave a party that, for some reason, I ended up getting invited to. And I was astonished by the number of Clinton haters who were standing online waiting to get into this party, including Robert Novak.
Mm.
All right? Novak was, you'd see him on the Sunday talk shows, he was ripping Clinton apart, and he's standing online waiting to shake his hand, waiting to go in to eat.
It's all a game to them. It's just a game to them. And, Michael, I guess it's an ongoing investigation is what we're saying, you know.
Actually, same thing with the commission of looking into weapons of mass destruction as well.
There was a report on
CNN last night that they immediately set up a committee commissioned to go and do that, and they've had one meeting, and that seems to be kind of going nowhere fast, too.
How about Joe in Manhattan? Joe, what's on your mind?
Hi, I have a question. I heard earlier that you were talking about George Bush getting his message across using simplistic language. However, I'm curious, there's such a word as suiciders that he used last night. I mean, this is a gentleman who graduated from Yale and Harvard, and he seems to be making up his own grammatical English.
Yes, but he was a legacy. He was a legacy.
Plus, there's a course for that at Yale and Harvard.
It's poetic
making
license.
Making up your own words.
It's poetic license. Suiciders.
Suiciders, yeah.
You know, I think, you know, sadly, Joe, I think that is his appeal to the people that support him, is that he seems sort of like to be a regular guy, and he'll just, you know, wing it and make up words and make up facts and, you know, stumble.
Do regular people make up words, too?
I don't know. It's just about keeping going, isn't it? At that point, he gets like, anything to finish off the sentence.
So
my brother laughed out loud when he said suiciders.
It's horrible, though, because I think people really like him because of that. It's not the leader thing. It's just sort of like, look at him up there trying to talk right.
Now, we're going to go next to Chicago and say good morning to Maureen. How are you doing?
Hey, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're fine.
Hi. I just want to comment on something from last night. I mean, I have so many thoughts and feelings. I'm obviously, like the rest of you, completely disgusted with his talk. But one thing that really stood out to me, and I'm wondering if anyone else felt this way, I felt that his speech had a religious fervor to it, especially when he made the remark that he gets his, his insights from the great Almighty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's God's chosen guy.
To the core of every human. And I would like to know, if he truly believes that, why is he so anti-gay? And why does he have so many issues with gay marriage? If he believes everyone in this country deserves to be free. So that's my comment for today.
We had an interesting guest, David Catania, council member for Washington, D.C., a gay council member for Washington, D.C., a Republican last week, who doesn't believe that Bush himself is really anti-gay. He feels that he has been strong-armed, appropriated by kind of Dick Cheney and the sort of hardcore religious conservatives in the administration, and that he's actually, you know, he'll go any which way just for the sake of politics.
Yeah.
He's pandering to his radical Christian base. But I agree with her, because the God that seems to talk to George Bush is very selective and very sort of narrow-minded.
Kind of like the guys that used to run the ropes at Studio 54. You know, kind of selective, narrow-minded.
God's just his doorman judging people's prettiness?
Yeah. Come on in. George, you can come in. The rest of you stay out, all right?
Let's talk to George in Long Island. George, are you there?
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good, good. A couple of points I want to make about the conference last night. First of all, he got that question. I forget who gave him the question, but somebody asked him, have you ever made a mistake, or what's the worst mistake you've made?
It was David Gregory, NBC.
Right. And he said, oh, geez, you know, I wish you'd given that to me earlier so I could have prepared for it. So that said to me, what, are most of these questions set up? Are most of these questions given him in advance?
Absolutely.
No, I think you can tell from his shaky response that many of them were not given to him in advance, but what was, the joke was a bit on him. They were very obvious questions, and you would have thought he would have had some more preparation, would have been a little bit niftier on his feet.
The other point I wanted to make, which is following up on the lady you just had on before, is there was a point where he said, what's the effect of, it's not just my idea that the world should be free, it's the idea of the Almighty that the world should be free, and since we're the most powerful nation on earth, it's our job to carry out the Almighty's work. That scared me. I shivered down my spine. I'm going, that's scary. That's this right-wing Christian...
Marin, that was the first thing you mentioned this morning.
Yeah, to impose the Almighty's will on unsuspecting or, you know, smaller peoples.
Yeah, right.
But I didn't... Yeah, all these questions he didn't know the answer to, but all he did was sort of try to struggle to find, you know, talking points in his head that would match them, the answers, you know, and that's why he never really answered in anything clearly.
Have you ever seen any of those little 8-ball things that they give
Magic
kids?
8-balls?
Yeah, where you turn it up.
Try again later.
Yeah, I get a feeling like maybe either he uses one or his head actually is one. I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
You got to look in his ear.
Let's go next to Mehdi from Louisville.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Good morning.
I'm a conservative Republican, which I'm very disgusted with George W. Bush since the Iraq War. I'm not going to vote for him. I'm very happy about your program. But a couple of comments about last night. He did not answer any of the questions. He had his own talking points, I guess. He came and just responded same thing. Every question was responded the same. And he did not get to the point. He did not apologize for his mistakes. And then on top of that, if you notice, he had a list of reporters that he was going to ask them to ask him questions. As you notice, he never asked questions from Helen Thomas. You know, she has boycotted her since 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a rehearse.
It wasn't a real press conference, is what you're trying to say. Did Al Jazeera get their credentials back, by the way?
I don't know.
No, they had theirs pulled off. They weren't allowed to attend White House news.
Why, because there's a question of their credibility?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
It was a presidential performance.
Yes, of the first order. The liberal agenda is up next. Plus, we'll talk to novelist Alice Randall when Air America Radio continues. Air America Radio. Makes me want to stand at attention and salute.
The Public Theater in New York presents a play written and directed by Tim Robbins, Embedded.
A savagely witty, very smart, very screwball, and ultimately very chilling comedy.
San Francisco Chronicle.
Embedded.
Wildly entertaining. You'll find more truth about war on this stage than you'll find in most newspapers.
BBC.
Embedded.
Poisonous.
Who's that from?
The New Republic.
Well.
Embedded.
Savagely witty and incisive, uncompromising.
LA Times.
Embedded.
Swift, savage, sharply clever lampoon.
New York Star Ledger.
Embedded.
Bad taste.
Who's that from?
Fox News.
Well.
Embedded.
Excellent, timely, and compellingly cutting satire, a tribute to the finest traditions of drama and political comedy.
Democracy Now!
Embedded by Tim Robbins at the Public Theater.
212-239-6200.
Order tickets now.
212-239-6200.
Order tickets now.
212-239-6200.
I'm a wife, a mother, and I'm on a waiting list for a double lung transplant.
A lung disease is threatening Robbie's life.
I've had cystic fibrosis all my life, but now my future depends on getting a transplant. My lung capacity is at 26%, so if a healthy, normal person would shut down three-quarters of their lungs, that's what I'm functioning on. As my health has declined, I miss some of the things that I love to do with my daughter. Bike rides, taking long walks, rake leaves in the fall and run and jump in them with her.
Right now, tens of thousands of people are waiting, like Robbie, for an organ or tissue transplant.
My driving motivation is my daughter and being there for her. It's hard to imagine a greater gift than the gift of life from an organ donor. It means life. I get to keep living.
You have the power to donate life. Be an organ and tissue donor. To find out how, go today to www.donatelife.net.
Planet Check. Planet Check.
Laptop lunches take a bite out of waste.
The whole thought behind our product is to get people to start packing waste-free lunches, and the trend right now is prepackaged food.
That's Tammy Pelstring, CEO of Obentech Incorporated.
On average, a child who takes a disposable lunch to school generates 67 pounds of waste. We're talking millions of pounds of waste are being generated.
Laptop lunches are inspired by the design of the Japanese bento box.
So our idea with our product is to try to get parents packing lunches again. In order to do that, we wanted to provide them with the tools to do that more conveniently and do it in a way that has style so the kids think it's fun. On the back door, preventing all that trash and plastic bags and foil and all of that from going to the landfills. Laptop lunches, tools to eat smart.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to tatmail.com, where environmentally conscious Americans get their internet access for free. Tatmail.com, helping people and the planet.
So what else is news?
The canceled speech said little about potential terrorism threats to the U.S.
Air America's Marty Kaplan.
This on the same day that terrorists hijacked four airplanes with relative ease. Instead, Rice was planning to hype the flaw-ridden multi-billion dollar missile defense system.
Marty Kaplan, evening 7 to 8 on Air America Radio.
Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio with Mark Riley and Mark Maron. Joining us now from her home in Nashville, Tennessee, is writer Alice Randall. In her latest novel, Pushkin and the Queen of Spades, in bookstores next month, she explores interracial relationships, messages about black beauty, and cultural connections between Russian literature and hip-hop artists. That's a
wow.
Wild one.
Yeah.
She ignited controversy and a lawsuit when she wrote The Wind Gone Down, a parody of Margaret Mitchell's Gone with the Wind. Morning, Alice.
Good morning, Sue.
In your book, you explore why it is that so many black women are offended by black men dating white women. Why do you think that is?
Because I think at the heart of racism is a failure to see beauty. And I think that black women who have had their beauty not recognized want their children to validate that beauty with their romantic choices.
So it's a failure to see beauty as something that's other, something that's different.
To see a failure to see beauty in the other. My father, I thought, was a black man who was very racist, and one of the ways his racism manifests is he never thought that any white women were beautiful. For me, as a young black girl, that was somewhat validating because I was surrounded by a world of blue eyes and blonde hair. As an adult woman, I want to get past that.
Well, I guess it could work two ways. I mean, it could sort of affirm a kind of a black child's idea of his or her own beauty, but really, a black man didn't find a single white woman good looking?
He probably had to work hard on that. And then, but racism is a very powerful thing. I think there are a lot of white men, for example, that maybe who don't find really any black women or black girls beautiful, with perhaps the exception of a Halle Berry. But if you ask them if they would actually go out with Halle Berry, I think a lot wouldn't. I know at my own daughter's school, 2 years ago, when there was not one black girl who was dating anyone white or black. Lots of black boys were dating white girls and being chosen, but none of the black girls were being chosen by white or black boys.
But Halle Berry is so beautiful, you know. Just going out with somebody that beautiful would be just too much anyway, it's racist.
Yeah, sometimes guys are just put off by women that they think are good looking and vice versa. You know, women are worried by guys who seem to be good looking.
Absolutely, there's an intimidation factor, but the fact of the matter is most people in America who are black have never dated a white person, period, and most people who are white have never dated a black person, period. And that when you go to more elite environments, say our top prep schools, where you have very attractive black and white teenagers, you still have a lot of that pattern. And one of the differences is black boys in those environments are found to be extremely attractive and desirable. And black girls who are extremely, you know, attracted by the general standards of the town that could be Benetton models are often not chosen by white or black boys in those environments.
Wait, hold on for a second now, because I went to one of those prep schools.
Great, which one?
The Gunnery.
Okay.
In Connecticut. And I was never considered desirable.
I had
trouble dating until I got into college, for God's sake.
Well, you know the problem I'm talking about, but my daughter's at St. Paul's right now.
Up in New Hampshire?
Up at Cary School. The most appealing boys in the class, considered by white and black girls, have been one or two very striking, very attractive young men who are of African-American background.
But isn't that an artificial environment, though? I mean, you're talking about putting people together in a prep school in a contained situation. These people very rarely get even to, into the towns where these schools are located. Isn't it kind of artificial?
Oh, it's very artificial, but it's interesting. It's become sort of a laboratory that in many of those environments, and we looked at Andover and Exeter, and I've had reason to visit all of them, that what's interesting is the girls are not chosen. There is a differential. One of the things I observed when I was writing this book, we were also visiting prep schools, and one of the things that I absolutely observed is at this moment in time, I was born in 1959, in that date, most interracial relationships were white men dating black women. That is a fact from the governmental census. But nowadays, the majority of white relationships are black men dating white women. And I think that has to do with I think it goes to the problems with beauty and race in America. People choose, girls choose boys and women choose men for reasons other than beauty. Often has to do with power and money. And black men can accumulate power and money in our society today and become thus more attractive.
I only chose women that laughed at my jokes.
Nah. Well, you clearly are one of those wonderful non-vegans.
That's why you didn't get any.
That's why my wife doesn't speak to me now.
You know, I don't know why that then cross-racial dating or cross-cultural dating should be the ultimate goal. People can't see beyond their own skin color, and they can't just go for someone because they're sexually attracted or intellectually attracted. Then
no, but
leave them
more
out of it. I mean, they're just missing out.
No, but there's a lot more baggage to it than that. When it comes particularly, I think, to black men and white women, black women, I should say, really do get upset to the point that they'll say something if an interracial couple's in a restaurant. What was the name of that? Oh, Jungle Fever. When Queen Latifah was waiting table on Wesley Snipes and Annabella Shiora, I think that hit home for a lot of people because they've experienced that. Where
I have friends today who, one of my best friends ran Wesley Snipes' company. I have other black women friends who still will not speak to her for having worked for Wesley Snipes. That's how deep the hurt goes.
Really? That was a work of fiction.
Yes. And she was just a producer, an Afro-Asian woman who was working as a producer, as an executive, and I have friends, a black woman who's a tenured professor at a notable university, who would not speak to her because she was so offended by Wesley's portrayal in fiction.
Wow.
But that goes to the injury that one of the hardest things as a black mother, and my book Pushkin and the Queen of Spades deals with psychosexual aspects of race in modern America, but from the perspective of a mother. But as a black mother, one of the hardest things, I have an objectively beautiful child who has white and black friends. I personally dated lots of white boys at Harvard and married two black men, so I've had experience with interracial dating. But as a black mother, it's hard even today to raise an objectively beautiful child in Nashville, Tennessee, and have her feel beautiful. One of the reasons I sent my daughter to boarding school is that down here in Nashville, she'd always say to me, "Mommy, I'm not pretty."
But Alice, you bring up an interesting thing, the fact that you dated a bunch of white men, but you married two black guys. I mean, there's a difference between sex and dating across race and culture and actually whom you decide to actually stay with. Because what it comes down to in the end for long, long-haul relationships is shared cultural values. It's not just about lust and whether someone's hot or not. It's about whether you can really...
It isn't?
Beneath, it's about that...
No, it's you.
I said, didn't say it's not about it. It's not just about... So you... You know, it's take...
It'll take time. It wasn't about purely, it was not about sex in that sense. And those are different cultural values, too. But literally, because of those relationships, you know, one of them, you know, lasted three. We're talking about serious relationships of 3 years where there or more, where there were shared cultural aspects. And I think that it shows that we can belong to many different cultures. And, for example, the person I dated for 3 years at Harvard, he and I are still very close friends. His mother came to both of my weddings. We are very close.
That is close.
He took his three children to see my child in the play at St. Paul's earlier this year.
Maybe you should have stuck with him instead of having two others.
No, no, but it's interesting. I'm with my husband, yes.
Yeah, okay. We want to be clear about that you didn't marry two black guys at the same time and drop one of them.
No, I married two men. That's a funny story for you. But my first husband's big problem is he turned into a reactionary conservative.
Uh-oh, we are with you on that. Good for dumping him. Alice, we have to thank you very, very much because we're way out of time. Alice Randall, her latest novel, Pushkin and the Queen of Spades. Thank you very much.
It's in bookstores next month.
Yeah, did the facts come? That seems set up.
It wouldn't be Wednesday.
That seems set up to me. Well, we have today's liberal agenda, who from Barbara Streisand's compound. She gives us the marching orders for every day, and here we go. Take notes. Lobby for bill that requires off-duty Marines to dress in women's clothing. Leave bag of burning crap on Sean Hannity's doorstep. Write polite, respectful note requesting that Muqtada al-Sadr make commencement address at son's graduation. Write glowing review of Oliver Stone's Fidel Castro documentary, then make arrangements to see the film. Sneak into Cal Thomas's house while he's sleeping and shave half his mustache.
Ouch.
Ooh. Write letter to FCC complaining about indecency on Paul Harvey's radio show. Did you just go ouch, Sue?
I just imagined half a mustache being ripped off.
How much is shaved off?
I was thinking of the ripping thing.
She was thinking of plucking.
Very good. Well, that's our liberal agenda for today. Thank you, Barbara, and make sure you made note of that.
We appreciate it. Join us tomorrow on Air America Radio when we'll have the latest on the September 11th hearings. Plus, can we convert a dyed-in-the-wool conservative? We'll take a shot at it and give you some help with your taxes, Air America style. That's tomorrow's morning's edition here on Air America.
Then I was thinking Hakuna Matata.
Uh-oh.
In the name of Sider's name.
You're listening to 1190 WLIV New York, the home of Air America Radio.
Hey, this is Rachel from Unfiltered on Air America Radio, where we promise you news and opinions you will not hear anywhere else, including on the rest of the network. It's unfiltered at airamericaradio.com. That's our email address. We always love to hear from you. I'll be back in just a second with Chuck D and Liz Winstead right after news from Air America Radio.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. One of the panelists of the 9/11 Commission is making headlines this morning about what's before the American people to decide on who's telling the truth or lying about knowledge of terrorist activities. U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft yesterday denied that he dismissed reports about terrorists given to him at the time by interim FBI Chief Thomas Picard. Panelist Richard Benveniste, in an exclusive interview with Air America's Morning Sedition, thinks Americans must pay close attention to the fine print in commission testimony.
There was absolutely no evidence that Saddam had anything to do with 9/11.
But yet,
although I must say that the American people, according to certain polls, seem to get that idea as the result of confusing the issue to some extent in statements that emanate.